if you don't live in Scotland, you could be forgiven for never having heard of. Lead calls for Keir Starmer to quit Downing Street. And, you know, in that moment, I felt something somewhat unexpected crystallise. I realised that despite, obviously, a terrible time being had by all, I was quite relieved when I realised that it wasn't going to happen this time, that the ball was not going to drop. But it led me to ask myself one extraordinary question that I will ask you after this.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock. Sir Keir Starmer's hosting a meeting of his cabinet after surviving his most damaging day yet as Prime Minister. He told a meeting of his MPs last night that he won't walk away, despite growing calls for him to quit. Sir Keir's also facing reports of another resignation from his team of senior officials. Cabinet Minister Ed Miliband refused to say on LBC whether Sir Keir's cabinet secretary is about to step down.
I'm not going to get into Chris Wormald. Look, the big picture here is all of my advice to my colleagues, above all, is focus on the country, not on ourselves. And it's not just my advice, it's the collective will of the Labour Party that we saw yesterday. And dare I say it, Nick, I think that's what a lot of your viewers and listeners will want us to do.
Buckingham Palace says the King's made clear his profound concern about the allegations against his brother, Andrew Mountbatten Windsor. It says officials stand ready to support police with any investigation. The former prince has always denied any wrongdoing over his links to Jeffrey Epstein. Birmingham's bin strike is set to continue until at least September in their long-running dispute over pay. Workers have voted to carry on their industrial action in the latest ballots. Ona Kassab is from the Unite Union.
We've knocked on over 20,000 doors across Birmingham, and it's absolutely clear that the sympathy with the vast majority of people is with the strikers. They can see that working class people cannot afford to lose those types of sums. What they're seeing all over social media is the council claiming that there's absolutely no problem, that the rubbish is being cleared, when we all know that's an absolute and utter nonsense.
Birmingham City Council maintains Unite has rejected fair and reasonable pay offers. A survey suggests most graduates would vote for a political party that promised reform of the student loan system. Campaign platform Rethink Payment says 84% of people would be influenced by such policies. Ministers insist it is balanced, but campaign groups warn that graduates' debt interest is spiralling. And flood warnings are in force for almost 100 areas in England. There's no sign of a prolonged dry spell for at least a week. The warnings mostly cover the south, the Welsh border and the East Midlands. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 27 at 10,358. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.14. LBC weather, cloudy for most, with spells of rain falling heavy at times. A drier morning for the south, a high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Tesco Finest, Alderwood Smoked Bacon. The foundation for the ultimate bacon butty. It's why only the finest bacon is traditionally hand-cured with Cornish sea salt, delicately smoked over Alderwood, and matured for at least 19 days. Layer it between slices of crusty bread and savour its richer flavour. All you have to think about is brown sauce or red. Make your everyday taste better with Tesco Finest. Majority of larger stores.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 3 minutes after 10. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where I feel that the spotlight has moved on and no one will be breathing a louder sigh of relief than Sir Keir Starmer. And so, for the record, am I. A deep dismay and disappointment with much of what has gone on, notwithstanding. As I explained to you yesterday, you know, you feel it in your bones when you have beaten your hopium habit, when you have managed to wean yourself off the hopium, off the hope that despite myriad disappointments, you still believe that things can get better. I had it with Trump for a very, very long time. And obviously, that's where comparisons end between these two leaders, but the idea that Trump would turn out not to be a fascist or absolutely hideous, hateful and disgusting, all of those things, and everyone does it. Everyone did it. I presume it's a lot harder to do if you actually tickled his toes or you were cheerleading for him, or if you used that phrase that seems to have disappeared from discourse, Trump derangement syndrome, was a way that people who suggested that he was none of the things that he so plainly was were suffering from when they described all the things that he'd actually done. So it's oddly liberating when you cut the umbilical, as it were, to hope. And I haven't done it yet with Keir Starmer. I'm going to be completely honest with you. I realised during the course of yesterday's programme that probably rather like a cabinet minister, the unknown unknown was probably better than the known unknown. So the unknown known is how's he going to perform moving forward. The known known is how he's performed in the past. And the unknown unknown is what on earth would happen if he wasn't there anymore. And I was more spooked by the unknown 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 than I was by the unknown known. Or beg your pardon, the known unknown. Did anyone follow any of that? Keith, you all right? Keith's back after taking a day off because he always likes to enjoy the Super Bowl in full knowledge that he won't have to get up and listen to me the next morning. And that was an interesting moment. It wasn't an area of hopium, but it was just not yet able to let go. And I quite like that feeling. I you know, the idea that you still want the best for your country and therefore you still want the best for your government or your prime minister. It's hard to hold on to when things are absolutely heinous. Can I confide in you briefly? I've come up with a new word which goes alongside the four donkeys that we discovered last week. I don't know, but I can say it on the radio. Eleanor's a little bit worried, but I don't think it works because it would look great written down, but it's really hard to say. And I invented this word. So if I find it hard to say, it's highly light. And I've practiced now. I said it 14 times in the toilet mirror just a moment ago. I was waiting to see what might appear. Four donkeys would appear behind me. So the four donkeys of the apocalypse are, obviously, Brexit, Boris Johnson, Liz Truss, and austerity. But I wanted something that was a little bit more expressive of just how awful those four things were. The four foundation stones of our country's current plight, whatever you may be reading in the Daily Telegraph or the Daily Mail or hearing certain people pronounce upon every day. Those four things, many of which people... Eleanor doesn't want me to say it. Oh, hang on, she hasn't finished writing it. Over and over and over again. Oh, yes, okay. So I can say it at least seven times, just not in quick succession. So rather than the four donkeys of the apocalypse, I thought that we could call it the four donkeys of the crapopalypse. Yeah? Is everyone all right? Ofcom okay? Love Ofcom. Is everyone okay? Keith, you all right with that? Is that okay? Yeah? Is that Eleanor? Everyone still here? Phone ringing? Yeah? They're probably all in a meeting, are they? I'll say it once more. The four donkeys of the crapopalypse. And I'm going to take advisement from Ofcom on how often I can say that in the course of an average show. Because I don't want to get anybody, least of all me, into trouble. So, there they are. And it occurred to me that because of those four donkeys... Brexit, Boris Johnson, austerity, Liz Truss. And because of the rise of populism, most obviously the massive fanboy, the biggest fanboy of all probably, for all four of those donkeys, Nigel Farage currently riding high in the polls. I don't know that we know what we want from a prime minister anymore, actually. And it's not, I don't think it's going to be a question that invites the same answer all the time. You know, at the end of a 15-year run of power, you probably would answer the question rather differently from how you would at the beginning of a run of power or halfway through an electoral cycle. Why does it seem that the country is so hard to govern at the moment? Alistair Campbell has blamed it on the media, but I'm afraid, go with him on this. It's obviously the case that our media is feral and febrile, and for the avoidance of doubt, a Labour Prime Minister is held to ridiculous standards compared to what a Conservative Prime Minister is held to. But that treats your fellow man and woman as if they're completely stupid. And we know that at least 52% of the population isn't. Keir Starmer's popularity rating is absolutely in the gutter at the moment. Has been for a while. He's shedding senior staff members like it's going out of fashion. And yet there's still, of course, a sense of confusion about why the fuse on the Mandelson scandal was so long. But what do we want from a prime minister? Do we know? Do we know what we want from it? Well, I think you know what you want. At least I hope you know what you want. And if you don't currently know what you want, then hopefully you will do by 20 past 10 when I start taking your calls. What do you want from... I mean, there's two questions here, isn't there? What do we want from a prime minister is a slightly different question to what do we want from this one? And if, like me, you find yourself relieved this morning, although pretty trepidatious about what the near and distant future is going to hold and throw up. He was one resignation away from toast yesterday. And as Sarwar thought that he would be the little boy up a mountain yodeling and an avalanche ensued, and he didn't. He just ended up looking like a weird bloke making strange noises at the top of a mountain. But it could have gone the other way. One wobble yesterday, one high-profile resignation. Always a more courageous act, by the way, than calling for a resignation. Someone should have told Anna Sarwar that. Always, if you want to make a powerful point, do it in some way that jeopardizes yourself. Demonstrate a little bit of guts, a little bit of courage. Say, right, I can't put up with this anymore, I'm off. But to just heckle from the sidelines your own team is absolutely, in my view, pathetic. When you become a senior player, like the leader of Scottish Labour. But that's not really relevant to the question that I want to ask you today. The question that I want to ask you today is what do we want from a prime minister? 03456060973. And the second part of the question is, what does he need to do now? What does the current prime minister need to do now? If I don't know if this works, because we're probably not clear enough between us on what exactly the job entails. And it's one of those jobs that's quite fluid. It's a bit like being my producer, or being a producer of an LBC radio show. It depends entirely on who the presenter is. Eleanor, obviously, as the producer, is by far the most successful show on the station, is revered. She's treated like a god wherever she goes in the production office. But if you're working on a failing show, or if you're working on a show that's not doing so well, then your job is very different. You have people breathing down your neck all the time. So being chief of staff in Downing Street is not a job that you and I could write a CV for, because it's going to depend very much on who the prime minister is. And there's a strong sense that Morgan McSweeney had too much influence and too much power. But that's Keir Starmer's fault. That's not Morgan McSweeney's fault. Keir Starmer is widely regarded by people who follow these things very closely as being a little bit too fond of delegation and a little bit too fearful of final decisions. If you think about his entire career before becoming a politician, he does the best he can possibly do, and then the judge makes the decision. This is why, I mean, it pains me enormously to say it, but the line, lawyer, not leader, probably has a little bit more salience than I realised when I was lambasting everybody who used it. I quite like lawyers. We'd be lost without them, but they are far from from perfect profession. But his entire career has been spent doing the best he can do, making the best arguments he can possibly make, and then sitting back to find out what the judge says. Whereas I think, and I've only just formulated this thought as clearly as it's just appeared in my brain, I think he needs to start being a bit more of a judge and a bit less of an advocate or an attorney. He has to actually start being a bit more decisive rather than, because if you think about U-turns and wobbles, they are evidence perhaps of doing the best you can do and then letting the judge reach a verdict. And then because he's not a lawyer anymore, and when the verdict drops, he doesn't just go home and move on to the next case. He has to undo the damage that's been done by not predicting what the verdict would be. And this is where Alistair Campbell's analysis has some legs, of course, because the judge in many ways is the media, or the media at least is the lens through which the public often judges, which means he also needs to have the confidence sometimes to say, get lost, I don't care what the polls say, I don't care what the headlines say, this is the right thing to do, and therefore I'm going to carry on doing it. Is that right? I don't know. And then, of course, as head of the DPP, he would have the power to make decisions, but only in what would be pursued. He had no power over what the verdict or the conclusion of those decisions would be. he would say, yes, we will pursue that case, or we will pursue that case. Nazir Afzal gets on the phone to him from Manchester and says, look, I really want to reopen these grooming gang inquiries that haven't been properly conducted. And Nazir Afzal said to him, with, you know, the ones involving men from a similar background to my own. And regardless of what lies you're reading on social media over the last few years, Nazir and Sir Keir Starmer led that revision process, led that quest against advice in many cases, and certainly against precedent. And he could do that, but he couldn't guarantee what the verdict of those cases would be. And that's why today I want you to tell me what you want from him, what he needs to do next. And before you waste tuppence, we've done all the phone-ins where the answer to that is resign. Those phone-ins are over for now. What he needs to do next. If you were going into Downing Street as Sir Keir Starmer's chief of staff, what would you put on the, what would you do? Actually, I'm not even going to finesse that question too much. I'm not going to talk about to-do lists or policies, because you can choose anything you want. It could be the thing you would do first, perhaps, or the thing you would do when you went into 10 Downing Street as chief of staff. 0345 6060973. Some of it can be revisionism. You can just want to undo things that have happened already, or reset courses, or recalibrate conditions. What do you want to do? What do you want the Prime Minister to do? And the question that I don't think works as a phone-in, I could be wrong, and if I am wrong, you're about to prove it, but the whether or not the country is governable at the moment, I don't know that we can get a proper handle on that. Some questions sometimes are too nebulous. They're too unspecific, too vague. Is the country ungovernable? But instead of asking you that, it's almost as if what do we want from any Prime Minister at this moment? So what does Keir Starmer need to do with his very particular and specific set of circumstances that he currently finds himself in, with the record that he currently has in the office? What does he need to do? And what do you want from a Prime Minister? Either right now, regardless of who it is, or just generally? Because I thought I wanted... Dullness is a strange word, isn't it? Because it's almost always intended as a pejorative or an insult. As I get older, I crave dullness a little bit more. You know, Buddhists and Zen, and the idea that you feel you have a complete and constant equilibrium. First time I went to a Buddhist temple, I thought that was the worst thing I'd ever heard. I thought it was before I went to therapy, and I thought the idea of not having moments of euphoria was a terrible way to live your life. But of course, that's not even a trade-off. If you don't have moments of euphoria, you don't have moments of hideous despair. You live in a state of almost perpetual peace. And dullness then becomes something rather beautiful and something rather wonderful. I thought I wanted dullness, but that's not enough. Because it's all very well what me wanting it. What if the rest of the country doesn't? What if, I mean, you can see, what if populism still has a hold on our population? It probably still has a hold on your nan. What's the opposite? Ooh, here's a good one. Three questions today, Keith. Are you writing them all down? Because I'll have forgotten. What's the opposite of populism? 0345 6060973. What does Keir Starmer need to do now? You know, these are brilliant questions, even though I say so myself. This could get us right through to 1 o'clock. What does Keir Starmer need to do now? 0345 6060973. What do you want from a Prime Minister? 0345 6060973. And where populism is the Johnsonian or Faragist practice of making promises that are entirely unkeepable, but people want to hear, we'll stop the boats, we'll deport immigrants, we'll do this, we'll do that, we'll make everybody rich. Liz Truss was a form of economic populism. We'll give you lots of money without having any knowledge of where on earth it's going to come from. So populism is making promises that you can't keep, usually, but not always, appealing to prejudices or ignorance. Brexit means Brexit is the most perfect example of populism in recent years. What's the opposite of populism? Hey, come here a minute. What if the answer is the same to question 2 and question 3? What do we want from a Prime Minister? What's the opposite of populism? What if it's the same? Well, we'll find out, shall we? 0345 6060 973. It's 10:19.
LBC. At ulisprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulisprosperity.com.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for Wednesday's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto. From the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
I'm Leah, and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right, so my GP referred me to the CDC. Had some blood tests done, and within 24 hours, I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS fit for the future. Available England-wide.
You're actually quite funny. Sorry, not quite funny. Very funny. I'm surprised at how much I just laugh. Not that I'm surprised that you're funny.
When words fail, there's our number one Valentine's dine-in for £25. With options including succulent scallops and king prawns with roasted garlic butter, tender sirloin with triple-cooked fries, and creamy ruby and raspberry mousse, all from our number one range. Plus a crisp bottle of Prosecco. Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Selected lines and stores subject to availability. Offer ends 15th of Feb. Please drink responsibly. Non-alcoholic drinks also available.
Discover the world of Dobble. Back in McDonald's Happy Meal. Race through the worlds of music, sports, space and more. How quickly can your little one spot the match? Dobble's bursting with fun. Some fun, some food. It's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 5th of March 2026, from 11 a.m, includes one pre-selected book or toy. Dobble range comprises toys only, while stocks last.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It's 21 after 10, and while words are obviously going to be at the centre of your answer, it'd be a bit weird if you just rang up and made some noises and expect, or used the medium of dance to convey your thoughts. Having said that, I don't know if you've listened to Full Disclosure yet this week, but Mark Constantine is my guest, the founder of Lush, the cosmetics company. And he has synesthesia, as I mentioned to Sheila at the end of yesterday's show. And synesthesia, what I didn't realise, comes in millions of different forms. So some people see sort of colours as numbers or numbers as colours. But he communicates his sense of smell replaces what some other senses would do in most people. And it's the first time in my life I've ever said to somebody in the middle of an interview when they're trying to dredge up a memory, I've just said, tell me what it smells like. That memory. And he did. I'm not going to make a habit of it, but I'm just pointing out that it isn't actually a stupid thing to say that you're going to have to use words to express yourself, because we do sometimes use other things. And you will have to then explain what the words mean. I will dig into, because some of the words might be a little bit obvious. You know, I want apple pie and mother love. I want stability. What does that mean? What that might be the, in fact, get, prepare yourself for me saying, what does that mean? In the same way as I often find myself saying, what was it like? What does that mean? 22 after 10. Chris is in Bedford. Chris, what have you got?
Good morning, James.
Hello,
Chris. How are you?
Very well, mate. What's on your mind?
Yeah,
what does that mean? Sorry. Carry on.
Starmer, what does he do next? What he does next is he just looks out at the screen and says, shut up, because you voted me in 5 years ago. Wait for 29. Judge me then. Because he's doing the hard stuff. He's never going to be popular in the beginning. But when you look at how the media, combined with social media and foreign interference, that combination is what's pushing the agenda. I'll tell you how upset I am by yesterday. I rejoined the Labour Party yesterday because we need to stand behind him. The reasonable people, not the crazy leftists. The reasonable people. And there is no alternative. There's no alternative to Starmer. He's dull. He looks like a man who's about to burst into tears all the time. But that's not the qualification for the job. Come on. And I'll tell you the other thing. His director of communications resigned the other day.
Yeah,
I thought he didn't have one from how badly they communicate. I'd have sacked the director of communications 6 months ago.
I don't think he's been there 6 months. I think he's only been there three. So they kind of did, which in many ways makes your point. But possibly we shouldn't even know the name of the or know the existence of the director of communications. There's a bit of chicken and egg here, obviously. But and the media are going to be feral and febrile all the time, and they're going to go after Labour prime ministers and Labour politicians more than anybody else, because their job essentially is to protect wealth, most obviously the wealth of Viscount Rothermere or Rupert Murdoch or the Barclay brothers until relatively recently. But also, Keir Starmer's personal ratings are absolutely through the floor. And nobody blamed that on the media when it happened to Boris Johnson or Jeremy Corbyn. There are massive problems there, but I feel we've had those phone-ins. We've picked over those bones. I'm just challenging you on the idea that none of this is self-inflicted, because that's palpably ridiculous. What you're saying is he just needs to carry on what he's been doing thus far, and that is frankly a little bit weird, Chris.
No. Well, take my good point. It's what the problem is. What he's been doing well thus far is not being communicated. Now the Mandelson thing, that's been dragged through the gutter endlessly the last few days.
Yes.
But he was appointed for a specific reason to handle a particular gentleman. And despite all the baggage, there probably wasn't anyone else at the time who could do that. Subsequent revelations, yeah, and you make decisions. U-turns are not U-turns when they're adjustments. So I'm behind him. You know, he's in a difficult position, but when you see social media posts, there's one the other day which shows a graph of education versus voting intentions, which plainly says that if you're a thicko, you vote Reform. Now, that is so disparaging. It's such a bad thing to put out there, because that's elitist being judgmental.
It's tricky, though, isn't it? Because education levels do... There is, correlation and causation are curious cousins at the best of time, but there is clearly a link between education and not being frightened of modernity, or not being frightened of people who aren't like you or don't look like you or don't sound like you, because education broadens the mind. And I kind of agree with what you say, but you need to be very narrow-minded to think that Nigel Farage is the answer to anything, don't you?
He's not the answer to anything. Well, you know that, I know that, any reasonable person. But, you know, I'm shouting into a void here, because anyone listening to you...
You've got 1.45 million listeners. What are you talking about?
Yeah, but that's my point exactly. We all like what you say.
You should read my inbox. Right, here's Julian. How dare you suggest that this is... Are you ready? This is from Julian. OMG. Okay. O'Brien's incoherent, grey droning monologues are mirroring the miserable weather. God help us. You see? He's listening.
Oh, that's the kind of people who respond to my posts on Facebook.
That's the kind of person that votes for Nigel Farage. In fact, I shouldn't say that. Let's have a look at his history and see if he really is as awful as he said. Oh, here we go. Why are you fixated with sticking labels on Donald Trump when our own authoritarian prime minister is arguably equally as dangerous to the British people? Just remind me about the British people that have been shot in the face by Keir Starmer's stormtroopers recently, would you, Chris?
Well, this is the point exactly, isn't it?
Hang on, he hasn't finished. British people are frightened at the prospect of another 4 years of Starmerism, says the stupidest man to text me so far today, but it's only 10:27. So don't let Julian waltz away with the gold medal when there is so much time for you to be stupider than him on 84850. I like your analysis. Are you an upbeat man? Are you a glass half full kind of character, Chris?
Well, I am and I'm not. It depends what I read first thing in the morning. But, you know, from my perspective, I'm a lifelong socialist, but I'm also a business owner. And
yes.
I know a lot of people in, if you like, the business world who think their natural affiliation with the Conservative Party. I would take a Conservative Party that was left-leaning in the same way as I will take a Labour Party that is right-leaning but still aware of what they need to do as a socialist party.
Yes.
I'd probably prosper more under a Conservative government, but I have a moral compass.
Never been a Tory budget. I didn't come out better off than I went into it. Same with you, I imagine.
Well, it's more about a philosophical mindset to who do you sit with? Thanks to you, I bought my subscription for what was the New European is now the world.
Excellent.
And I genuinely, you were interviewing the editor when he was just transitioning to the new Kelly. The new program. And I, as soon as I finished listening, I went on, signed up, and now I get it, and I read it. And I have to say, there's some good stuff in it, but most of it seems to be elite intellectuals, philosophers.
Yeah.
Very nice stuff to read.
But it's not going to butter any parsnips on the doorsteps.
It's navel-gazing.
Yeah.
And I think Alistair, I like his stuff, but no, I think with Starmer, coming back to your point, eventually, he just needs to dig in.
Just
and
carry
I think
on.
What we saw,
keep calm.
What we saw yesterday with the Labour, with the cabinet getting behind him.
Yes.
And with, I think, if anybody bothered to count.
Go on, I've got to hurry you now because the news is coming up.
Yeah. You'd see there's more behind him than against him. And it's like those posts that say 1/3 of the population don't like this. Well, yeah, 2/3 do.
Well, we'll see. And I like your analysis, and I was enjoying your praise for the New World, which I'm sure Matt Kelly was enjoying as well. But then it did go a little bit off kilter for someone seeking to sell more subscriptions. I take your point, though. Just before you go, just to prove the point, Julian now has a challenge for the gold medal in Idiot's Corner today. This is unsigned. I want the Prime Minister to close LBC and arrest... they've written Ames O'Brien, but I'm pretty confident they mean me. I want the Prime Minister to close LBC and arrest James O'Brien. If we could keep those sort of suggestions to the texts, maybe, and not clog up the phone lines, as if you'd ever have the guts to rig it anyway. But and I'm looking at you, Julian. But the idea that those kind of perhaps less serious answers to the question of what we want a Prime Minister to do, we could probably find some room for them on the programme. Speaking of which, more of your calls after the headlines with Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer is chairing his first cabinet meeting since telling MPs that he won't resign from the top job. Yesterday, he faced calls from the Scottish Labour leader to quit over the Lord Mandelson scandal. A former Metropolitan Police inspector has been charged with a series of sexual offences. The charges against John Doyle, who's 53, span a 12-year period until 2024 and relate to one alleged victim. And Birmingham's bin strike is set to continue until at least September. Workers have voted to carry on their industrial action over pay in the latest ballot. LBC weather cloudy for most, with spells of rain falling heavy at times, drier in the south, a high of 13 degrees.
This is LBC.
One of the best things about a holiday with Saga is your chauffeur, who'll pick you up and drive you to your departure point. Whether you're river cruising along the Rhine past storybook castles or uncovering centuries of history on a tour of Japan. Even better, they'll pick you up and drive you home again afterwards. 2026 season now on sale. Search Saga Holidays. Experience is everything. Nationwide chauffeur service available on UK mainland. Full terms apply, over 50s only.
Hey you, do you ever think the old you wants a new you? You do?
Well, we do too.
Our one-stop Wondershake guarantees you a new body, face, and personality. Your friends won't even recognize you. But don't worry. With Wondershake, you'll make better, hotter friends. And just like in some...
Really? Don't fall for fads this January. Holland & Barrett give you the facts. Get expert advice on nutrition, supplements and skincare that actually give your body the nourishment it needs. Holland & Barrett.
Lost World Play Barn. Dragon Castle Children's Farm. Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn. Quadrapillar, Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot, Bears. Kids, put on your swimmers for Jungle Splash.
Yeah, let's go, Mum.
Right. Cannon Arena, Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom go-karts, Wave Runner 2, Magical Wood and Cafe!
Nutcatch Adventure Park. Book now at nutcatch.com.
You plan a holiday, you plan a commute. Meal plans, career plans, even workouts need a plan. So doesn't it stand to reason that your money has one too? Because the sad truth is, if it doesn't, it's just sitting there, barely growing, if at all. That's why you need a money plan, and Quilter can help. It's a lot easier to stick to than a workout plan. Money needs a plan. Quilter. Pensions, investments, advice. Find out more at quilter.com.
Listeners, we interrupt the airwaves to share an incredible discovery. The reason why Britain hasn't been so great of late is because the country hasn't been eating enough Weetabix.
We must get to work in rebuilding Great Britain, Bix by Bix. By delivering Weetabix to whoever plans the traffic diversions.
to delivery drivers who can't seem to find your house.
And people who don't stack the dishwasher properly.
To Britain, we must say, have you had your Weetabix?
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60973.
It's 10:34. What is the single most important thing to bear in mind when listening to programmes like this one? I know what you're thinking. There are no other programmes like this one, James. But you take my point. And I think it is that several things can be true at the same time. So Keir Starmer is probably finished. He'll probably be off after the May elections, barring latter-day General Galtieri invading the Falkland Islands or some other unspecified extraordinary act. And there's part of me that hopes not. But equally, the current approval ratings and the track record and recent events are absolutely awful. But these things can all be true at the same time. And of course the media plays a role in it, but the idea that if it weren't for the media, Keir Starmer would be enjoying 80% Kim Jong-un-style approval ratings. Actually, speaking of Kim Jong-un,
why aren't there any protests against North Korea in this country? Why is it only ever against Israel that we see protests? Why is no one ever protesting against North Korea or Ming the Merciless?
Sorry, I have no idea where that came from. But you look at Keir Starmer's approval ratings, and you know that a lot of it is down to the usual influences, but not all of it. So what do you want from him? And what should he do now are slightly different questions, but I suspect that the answer to the question of what we want from a prime minister is the same as the answer to the question, which no one else has done yet. No one else has answered yet. What is the opposite of populism? Have we forgotten what it looks like? This perhaps is why the country feels ungovernable. Because you've got the bloke in... It's the... Hey! It's the speedy weight machine and the ghost train, isn't it? On like weapons grade level, can you actually sell any tickets for the Speak Your Weight machine when the bloke over there selling tickets for the ghost train has the biggest advertising budget in the history of the world? I don't know. I'll explain that further a little later if I have to. Paul's in Milton Keynes. Paul, what do you want? What do you want, and when do you want it?
Well, good morning. In my mind, what I want from a leader is a vision, integrity, and accountability.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, those things don't really sell a lot of newspapers. I mean, Nigel Farage has got none of those things, and he's extremely popular. I think that Mr. Starmer, I think his problem is that he's been trying to please so many people at the same time, and he's forgotten to be a leader. Sometimes being a leader, you're going to be unpopular. Mm. If you set out your vision and you say, this is what we're going to do, and we're going to be accountable for the results, and we're going to tell you the truth, that I think is a good attribute for leadership to have. But I think most people in this country, they either want someone to throw stones at or they want someone to lift over their head. And they don't really understand what leadership means and how to apply their
What does it look like? Because I don't know whether it's a failing on my part or not. I'm always slightly worthy of, you know, all those books in airports about leadership. They're usually more prominent than mine, so I've probably got a bit of a bias here. You're buying the diary of a CEO or whatever it is, and there must be something to it. But if those books worked, everyone would be running a FTSE 100 company, wouldn't they? If they'd have to make it the FTSE 10,000 to accommodate all the massive successful companies by running all these people who've picked up leadership tips from airport books. But what would it look like in the context of, if I was to really put you on the spot, in the context of the winter fuel allowance, what would leadership have looked like?
Well, leadership would mean, okay, Great Britain, this is what we can afford. And we can help people with their winter payments to this amount. It might mean we might have to do some means testing and stuff like that. But this is what we can do. This is what we can afford. And we will do that. Now, some people are going to be happy. Some people are going to be sad. Some people are going to be mad. But the fact is, this is what we can do, this is what we will deliver, and that's what you pay your taxes for, and we'll do that. Now, that, to me, is leadership.
We're now joined by Jezebel Hockeystick from Reform UK, who would like to explain that her grandmother died in the war and fought against the Nazis, and also this, and she deserves her winter fuel allowance, thank you very much. And the crowd starts cheering.
Yeah, but Reform, they don't want power. Because that's
not the point, is it? I'm picking holes in your plan. I'm not analysing their prospects. I'm picking holes in your plan. There's the person over there selling tickets for the Speak Your Weight machine. And that's you.
Yes.
And here's me selling tickets for the Ghost machine. Roll up. I'm going to scare the life out of you. Oh, foreigners. Boats. What was that again? What was your boring stuff about what we can and can't afford, Paul?
Well, accountability means, we can't give everyone gold bars. We can't afford
that. Don't put that on a poster. Don't put that on a poster.
Well, I'm
well, Farage is probably beating you to it. That'll be the next big policy announcement. Gold bars for everybody white.
Indeed. Because that's what he's selling all the time.
Gold bars? Gold, well, bars, he's not. I mean, I think right he does actually take money from a gold bullion company among all the other jobs that he does when he's nowhere near Clacton. But I don't think he's actually offering gold bullion to all the white people yet.
Yeah, well, the opposition, it's easy to say what you want to say.
Yeah, but I think leadership's really hard, and you're trying to make it sound easy.
But on the contrary, leadership is difficult, and it's often unpopular, but it's the best. I mean, look, when I go to the doctor, sometimes he's going to ask me to take some medicine, which tastes horrible. The fact of the matter is, it's going to make me better. But I'm not going to enjoy doing it.
This is the interesting thing, isn't it? So in opposition, you can have a narrative of victimhood and broken Britain, even if you supported everything that broke Britain. The four donkeys of... Hang on a minute, mate. Can I say it again yet? Can I do it again? Has it been a big enough gap? Yeah, the four donkeys of the crapopalypse, trademark copyright JOB 2026. You can be a big fan of all four of those donkeys, austerity, Brexit, Boris Johnson, Liz Truss, and claim that you're somehow going to fix the country, because that's populism. That's making promises that you know you won't be able to keep. He's got to explain to people, we can't afford this and we need to do that. But then he changes it. Then he says, oh no, actually we've changed our minds about farming inheritance tax, about the winter fuel allowance, about all sorts of... That's the bit... That's where you're talking about, I think. That leadership would just involve buckling in for a bit longer and saying, sorry, we're not changing course. We need to explain better why we have to do it.
So that's the problem that he's fallen into, like I said at the beginning. Mm. He's trying to please everyone. He's fallen into that rabbit hole of saying, well, yeah, we can do everything and we're going to make everyone happy. And he's deluding himself. You can't do that.
Because that is a form of populism, in a way.
Exactly,
he's trying to do a kind of managerial populism, which ain't ever going to work, is it?
Exactly. I mean, trying to sell bad news when you're going to have to give bad news is never going to be popular. But sometimes, if you're a leader, I mean, I remember, I think it was the Prime Minister of Sweden, and he said, listen, we're going to have to do some things for our country. You're not going to like it, and I may lose the premiership, but it'll make the country better. And that's exactly what he did. And I said, well, that's the leader I want. That he's prepared to do something that's the right thing for the country, but he may stick with it because it's right.
Okay, so no, I like it. I guess the problem then becomes whether or not Starmer can make the changes that you so clearly articulate. Before you go, a quick quiz. Paul, do you want a quick quiz?
Okay, go ahead.
How much money is Nigel Farage paid by the gold bullion company that he does actually work for? While simultaneously being the MP for Clacton and very busy on Cameo, offering up accidental support for everyone from the IRA to imprisoned paedophiles. Is it A, £200,000, B, £300,000, or C, £400,000 a year for a second job promoting gold?
Well, I have to say, from the tone of your voice, I'd pick $400,000.
I've got to stop. I've got to be more like a poker player. I've got to have a better poker face. Is it A, £200,000? Is it B, £300,000? Or is it C, £400,000? Paul's right. £400,000. You can't really call it a second job when it's a seventh job, can you? What would you do if you were Prime Minister? Ban them all. Ban all the second jobs. Have we got any presenters on LBC at the moment that are in Parliament? I quite like that, actually. I think if you're doing a phone-in show where you can ring in and get on air, even if you hate the bloke who's on, hi, Julian, or if you are taking calls from people who can really put you on the spot, then it's actually quite healthy. But obviously, if you're on GBBs having your toes tickled by everybody in the building, then it's not. But you sometimes have to throw away the good to get rid of the much, much bigger bad. Ban all MPs from all second jobs. You want to come out with something big and shiny that really distinguishes you from everybody else, then that might be just one thing. That wasn't on the list of questions. That one big, flipping, huge blunderbuss of a policy that he could just bring in now as part of a reset. Ban all second jobs. Ban them all. So Lord Wolfson wouldn't be able to work for Roman Abramovich anymore, the sanctioned Russian oligarch, and the shadow attorney general simultaneously. Me neither. But also, you know, all of the MPs who double up or triple up or quadruple up or, I think in Nigel's case, octuple up would have to concentrate instead on doing the job that they're actually paid to do by the British taxpayer. It'll never catch on. Alan's in Prestwich. Alan, what would you like to say?
Morning, James.
Morning, Alan.
Very well, I think it's two callers ago. If Keir's listening, you know, will you get your comms team in order?
What does that mean? Oh, I've got there finally. What does that mean?
Right, what it means, James, is to say, look at the number of boat crossings that have tumbled. Look at the waiting lists that have tumbled. Look at, you know, how we're getting more and more alignment with Europe. Look how the economy's not doing too bad. Look how we saved the steel industry. Look how we're getting all this.
No, that's not how you improve your communications, mate. That's just
You get that message.
How?
James,
how?
By getting the comms team. So actually,
no. They're not like magic bullets. You can't just say get the comms team. You know, get. What's that spin off from Breaking Bad? Better call Saul. You can't just call Saul. You've got to tell me how you do. Listen, I'm the editor of the Daily Telegraph. Alan in Prestwich is on the phone trying to get me to put good news about Labour on the front page. Alan, over to you. Nice of you to call.
Well, there's more media streams.
Don't make me. Yeah, what though? What? Where? What? Who?
There's
why?
Social
where?
Media.
When?
We can do press conferences. We can do the television.
Conferences. I do quite like the idea of press conferences.
Farage
is having Nuremberg rallies every other day, so we could have some press conferences. We could have some prime ministerial addresses. I mean, the problem is he's got to say the same thing again and again and again, which is, I promise you, things are going to get better, but not tomorrow. And there is quite a lot of mess to clear up, and then they all start shouting and social media goes nuts. And remember, social media is gamed and bought and paid for by bad actors and foreign entities. They will start covering whatever he announces in audio, but there's a sense, and I'm with you on this, that they haven't tried hard enough.
No, they haven't. You know, the thing is, as well, Jane, I'm a local councillor, right, and there's no money.
Yeah,
there is
so
no money. That's why people are cheesed off with
how
the
you, you're joking, aren't you? Reform have just saved millions in Kent.
Oh, yeah, I mean, so the north
of me... Oh, no, my mistake. No, they haven't. Sorry, they just said that they had, but the figures don't back up
well,
the claims.
To the north of me in Lancashire, they're closing care homes. To the south of me in Derbyshire, they're closing the Elsall Waste Recycling Centres. And, you know, and the interesting... What are you going on about reform? We're door-knocking a lot.
Yeah.
And what's, you know, people say, well, we don't mind what you're doing around here. We don't like your government. And we say, okay,
keep it local.
The local elections in May,
yeah,
it's either us or reform. And I tell you what, 9 times out of 10 people say, you what? Reform? I am not voting for them. So, Brother Farage, the multimillionaire, and don't forget his £73,000 EU pension, he's not as popular as he thinks he is in some areas.
It doesn't have to be. That's the nature of our electoral system. But I take your point, and I'll take my hopium wherever I can find it at the moment. Quick quiz for you, Alan, before you go.
Please, James.
Okay, reform-led Worcestershire County Council, which came to power, like all reform-led councils, on a promise... I haven't finished. I've started, so I'll finish. Came to power on a promise to cut council tax. Is it poised to raise council tax by... And I'm going to change my voice here so I don't give away the answer. Ready?
I've read The Guardian, James.
Is it in The Guardian? I don't know. I only read the Daily Mail. Is it A, 8%? Is it B, 9%? Or is it C, 10%?
I think it's 9%.
Ding, 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 ding! Top of the class.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Having worked in Downing Street and watched a Prime Minister close up, I can't help but feel sympathy for him. I feel sorry for him. He's had a great career prior to politics. He's had an objectively successful career in politics. He seems a perfectly decent, nice enough man. He is absolutely rubbish at being Prime Minister.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
I'm Leah, and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right, and my GP referred me to the CDC. Had some blood tests done, and within 24 hours, I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Geographical and other restrictions. Minimum spend £60 and charges apply. New customers only. Maximum saving £20. Terms at Ocado.com.
To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
At ulizprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulizprosperity.com.
A Thames Link train is a place where you can wind down and catch up. A chance to let conversations flow and plans unfold. And swap doomscrolling for telling stories, too good for the group chat. Make the journey part of the joy and save one third with off-peak group tickets at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
You look really nice tonight. Not that you don't look nice normally. It's just I can tell you've made an effort. Not that you look scruffy the rest of the
time. When words fail, there's our number one Valentine's dine-in for £25. With options including succulent scallops and king prawns with roasted garlic butter, tender sirloin with triple cooked fries, and creamy ruby and raspberry mousse, all from our number one range, plus a crisp bottle of Prosecco. Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Selected lines and stores subject to availability. Offer ends 15th of Feb. Please drink responsibly. Non-alcoholic drinks also available.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for Wednesday's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto from the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
10.50 is the time. Great calls today. I've got Henry Riley joining us. I hope he doesn't spoil the calibre of contribution to the programme so far. About 11:30 for the latest update on what Farage's shower are up to without proper scrutiny from anyone in the media, it would seem. Did we get an answer to the question of how many times he appears in the Epstein files? Because we still find ourselves in that really weird place where Keir Starmer's job appeared to be, well, it was in a perilous state. Despite the fact he's not anywhere near the Epstein files himself. But Donald Trump, of course, whose regime is full of people who were very, very close to... In fact, his contacts book is full of people. In fact, he was best friends with the well-known paedophile Jeffrey Epstein. He doesn't appear, so far as I can tell, to have been touched by it at all, probably. We haven't had Simon Marks on for a while, have we? We should probably squeeze some Simon in soon in order to find out what's going on that front. But it is to the rather more theoretical questions that I direct your attention this morning. What should he do now, our Prime Minister? And what do you want from a Prime Minister? And no one's had a crack yet at telling us what the opposite of populism is. But I think that's because the answer is probably the same as what sensible people who can blend their pragmatism with a little bit of patriotism. What they want from a Prime Minister is probably whatever the opposite of populism actually is. Truth, honesty, integrity, accountability, transparency. I mean, they're not just words. But what else are they? What else is it? What does it mean? Michael's in Rugeley. Michael, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, good to speak to you again. So, as concisely as I can manage it, I know that we're living in a world where podcasts and long conversation are more popular than they've ever been. But I think in Keir Starmer's case, it would be really useful to sit down with someone reasonably amiable and talk a little bit about how we got to this point of why Peter Mandelson was in and around the government at all, maybe even before he appointed him, to just have a really long conversation to say... to essentially get to why it's him and not someone else. And I think that's a really fundamental question in terms of why certain people who have done certain things, and obviously the Epstein files are in the forefront of everyone's mind, why they're here. And I think we need a lot more understanding about why that is the case in terms of...
You mean treat the electorate like sentient adults?
Yes.
Ooh. I know. I mean, look at what we voted for. Look at the four horsemen. Can I say it again, Eleanor? Is it too soon from the last time? The four donkeys of the crapopalypse. They were all voted for by the people that you think we should treat like sentient adults. But you've got no choice, have you, ultimately?
Liz Truss wasn't.
Absolutely right. Sorry, I'm just thinking of all the Daily Telegraph and Daily Mail commentators who described, and Nigel Farage, of course, who all described her budget as the best thing since sliced bread. What about the cycle of news, though? Do you think people will still care about this in a week? Would it achieve anything for him to do it today? He's kind of said sorry. He's admitted it was a massive mistake. You want the anatomy of how the mistake was made.
Yes. No, and to be honest, I think in absence of him resigning, which, to be honest, I think is more likely than not, but I appreciate that's not what the phone is about. Failing him doing that, the only thing left is to say, look, we're at this point now. It's not isolated to me it's happened now, and let's try and get some forgiveness and some understanding of how that we got to that point. Because I think it's fair to say that if we were in a situation where it was Reform or the Conservatives, that it's just as likely that something like this would have happened. Fair enough, it wouldn't have been Peter Mandelson there, but it may well have been someone else.
I mean, it didn't go very well for Andrew Windsor, did it? And I mean, I don't know whether Emily would object to being described as amiable, but I find her eminently amiable. In fact, I call her the eminently amiable Emily. But someone told him it would be a good idea to sit down with Emily Maitlis and talk through how he had ended up in such hot water regarding Jeffrey Epstein. You're literally giving the same advice to Keir Starmer.
Yes.
And they're in completely different situations, and I'm only making myself laugh, sorry.
That's fine. Without any sense of irony, I think that's probably fine. Just in terms of your two other questions, that's all right.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think in connection with the first one, I think what I would like in a prime minister, you kind of touched on it already, is to say, look, I'm going to carry on with what I'm doing at the moment. I'm going to try and build on the work that I'm already doing. That being said, there has been mistakes of being made, and I accept that confidence has been eroded, and I want to try and help you understand why that is and how I can improve it in the future.
Show us who you are.
Very vague.
Show us who you are and what you're doing. I mean, it's a really... And that's the opposite of populism, of course, because the populist's nightmare is for the people to find out what they're really like.
Yeah.
When they don't realise they're being recorded and they're talking about grabbing women you know what they're grabbing.
Indeed.
It's the opposite of populism. I like that. I could listen to you all day, Michael, actually. You've got a lovely voice and you've got some really interesting thoughts.
Brilliant. I mean, essentially that's why I was coming on to number three. I would say the opposite of populism is someone who seeks to improve but not replace the levers of power. And I think that's essentially what we've kind of been talking about. It's the acknowledgement in this case that he is going to likely appoint people who are full of sleaze, but he can, with a little bit of work and a little bit of forward planning and sort of a vision outside of office, to say, look, we can actually maybe make it less likely in the future. But what we can't do is what a populist would do, is just like, you know what, I would never do that. Yeah. My people are great. I am the answer to all your prayers. Just follow me.
And then if someone points out that that's not true and that your people aren't great, then what you do, I believe, and I need to check my notes on this, you just shout Bernard Manning at them until they sit down again.
Yes, I'll take your word for it. I'm not so familiar.
No, it is. Yes. That's exactly. You just go, Bernard Manning, until the people stop pointing out that your party's full of racists and incompetents, weirdos, and various fruitcakes. And of course, misogynists. 30p Lead being deeply misogynistic yesterday on stage at a Reform rally, and I believe he got applauded. I remember when he was deeply sexist, and he was a Tory, which he was shortly after he was binned by the Labour Party, and I think it was Anna Soubry who called him an odious sexist. And that was what Conservative colleagues were able to do when 30p Lee was in the Tory party, and presumably when he was in the Labour Party as well, they could have done that as well. I wonder if any of the women in Reform UK will be calling him out for his odious sexism after he insulted Angela Rayner's looks. I'll say that again, because, we're talking about 30p Lee insulting Angela Rayner's looks. And that's what misogynists do, isn't it? It's coming out to 10:59. Here's a really interesting thing inspired by Michael. Do you know what Wes Streeting has done with regard to the Epstein files and Peter Mandelson? Because I'm not going to tell you, actually, until after the news. I quite want to carry on with this conversation, but I don't have to. So there are other things that I want to talk about. I'm just really interested in it, though. So what I'll do is I'll give you an invitation to ring in now and carry on this conversation. And I'll take a view with Eleanor, and we've not done this before, on the quality of calls that we've got waiting. So there's, you know, plenty of people still waiting, but I just want to see if the appetite to continue the conversation is shared. And the way you demonstrate that is not by texting me saying carry on, it's by actually adding what you want to add to the mix now by dialing 03456060973. And we may not move, we may well move on, but what I will do at the top of the next hour is tell you what Wes Streeting has done, and I'd be fascinated to know whether you know what Wes Streeting has done with regard to Mandelson and Epstein, because, or specifically Mandelson, because it's actually considerably more interesting than I realised until about 24 seconds ago.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, Sir Keir Starmer's been chairing his first cabinet meeting since telling MPs that he won't resign from the top job. Yesterday, he faced calls from the Scottish Labour leader to quit over the Lord Mandelson scandal. LBC's political editor Natasha Clarke says the Prime Minister received a warm reception from Labour MPs at a meeting last night.
He told them that he'd won every fight he'd ever been in, and as long as there was still breath in his body, he would continue to fight. And the MPs I've spoken to and that we've heard from have all been telling us the same thing, mostly that they are convinced by what the Prime Minister had to say, that they thought he had fire in his belly and they wanted to see more of that.
A former Metropolitan Police inspector has been charged with a series of sexual offences, including 5 counts of rape. They span a 12-year period until 2024 and relate to one alleged victim, John Doyle, who's 53, due to appear in court tomorrow. The new Archbishop of Canterbury has acknowledged the significant challenges facing the Church of England. In her first address to the National Assembly, Dame Sarah Mullally described taking on the role as a humbling privilege, but she also admitted that the Church has fallen tragically short at safeguarding victims from abuse. Her predecessor, Justin Welby, stepped down over failures in handling an abuse scandal. Bin workers in Birmingham have voted to extend their long-running strike action for another 6 months. The Unite Union is in a dispute with the City Council over pay and jobs. Birmingham City Council says Unite has rejected fair and reasonable pay offers. And the Environment Agency has issued flood warnings for almost 100 areas in England. The alerts cover the south, the Welsh border and the East Midlands. Meteorologist Claire Nasir's told LBC there's no sign of a prolonged dry spell until next week.
From the 31st December to yesterday, some spots of Devon, Cornwall, Hereford and Worcester have seen 40 consecutive days of rain. The city of Aberdeenshire, we're only a third of the way into February, but already Aberdeen has seen 180% of its monthly rainfall. That gives you some perspective of the copious amounts of water falling in some parts of the country.
In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 38 at 10,347. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.14. LBC weather, cloudy for most, with spells of rain falling heavy at times, drier in the south, a high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Do you belong here? Troubleshooting an engine in a military workshop? What's your gut saying? Want to turn the volume down? Or stay here and get paid to learn a trade? With an army apprenticeship that'll set you right for life. Still listening? You belong here. Army. Recruiting now. Search Army Jobs.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after 11 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. The politician most obviously on manoeuvres is Wes Streeting. And I don't necessarily mean anything negative by that. When the crown begins to wobble, those who are keenest to catch it when it falls will be those who are best placed to catch it. You know, a bit like being a bridesmaid when she tosses a bouquet over her shoulder. But he did something yesterday that I find really interesting, and I think it speaks to the questions that I'm asking you this hour, and, well, certainly at least half an hour. I'm going to continue to ask you, what does Keir Starmer need to do? I want to broaden it slightly, because it's not just about what we would like to see happen from a standing start. It's also about how you deal with crises. How you deal with problems, because he's had a nightmare on Mandelson, and some of it, obviously the original appointment is a problem entirely of his own making, but he lost his team, he lost his dressing room. And part of the reason for that is what I would, well, I sound like Miranda's mum now in that rather brilliant comedy show I was about to say, it's what I call indecision. But of course everybody calls it indecision, which is why it's such a good joke in Miranda's comedy show. Wes Streeting released all of his private WhatsApp messages with Peter Mandelson yesterday. And that kills the story stone dead. Well, if not stone dead, then it puts it on life support. If the Daily Mail had got hold of Wes Streeting's private WhatsApp messages with Peter Mandelson, if at some unspecified point in the future all of Mandelson's WhatsApp messages were made public as a consequence of an investigation, then they could have made great hay with this stuff. I mean, he was essentially putting the boot into his own government. He was describing his pessimism about keeping his own seat in Ilford at the next general election. These were only sent between August 2024 and October of last year. And he was worrying about the state of the economy. And he was perhaps displaying a degree of disloyalty to the cause or lack of faith in the mission than any personal disloyalty to Keir Starmer. But a good critique here. There isn't a clear answer to the question, why Labour? Mandelson responded by complaining about lack of economic philosophy. And Streeting replied, no growth strategy at all. So he is, what's the word that I want? He is talking out of class. He's talking out of school. He's talking behind the teacher's back, with Keir Starmer in this case being the teacher. He's strong on Gaza, as you'd hope. Streeting wrote that morally and politically, the UK needed to join France in going for recognition. Morally, because Israel is committing war crimes before our eyes. Politically, a Commons vote will be engineered in September on recognition, and we will lose it if we're not ahead of it. So, interesting strategy. But putting it all out there, most obviously, the extent of a friendship. And the existence of a relationship and a line of communication that was indiscreet or disloyal. Well, he certainly wouldn't have wanted these messages to be made public when he sent them, which is one of the bits of advice I would give to all politicians, unless they're communicating with their wife or husband. Do not send messages unless you don't put them on a record anywhere, unless you'd be comfortable with seeing them made public. I know it sounds a little bit obvious, but hey-ho, on we go. And what this has done is demonstrate decisiveness. And that's something you don't see from Keir Starmer. I don't know if you can change that. Can you learn things like that? That's why I'm vaguely sceptical of all those books in airports that the first caller talked about today. The idea that you read a book and suddenly you turn into a sociopath proto-billionaire who will be able to sack people without worrying at all about how they're going to feed their kids tomorrow. You're either built like that, Jeff Bezos, or you're not. Well, are you, though? You become like that. Who knows? It's a bit like thinking about Nazis. I know that sounds like a bit of a leap, but if the Nazis came to power, some people that you currently like and know would be full-on Nazis. Do you remember Lily, my friend Lily, telling us about the caretaker in her apartment block? Just couldn't wait after her father was taken away by the Gestapo. He couldn't wait to get his hands on her dad's clothes. He'd already taken the watch as a bribe. He just couldn't. You just never know who it's going to be. Read that article by Dorothy Thompson, Who Goes Nazi? In fact, read it before you vote. Who Goes Nazi? One of the best pieces of journalism ever written and still salient today, nearly 100 years after it was actually written. Published in Harper's Magazine, and you may not immediately find it without being able to subscribing, but it's out there. You can find it on my Blue Sky feed if you look hard enough, but it is extraordinary. And I feel the same way about that some of the skills that you need to be a business leader or a political leader. I don't know how much can be learned and how much is innate. Margaret Thatcher had voice lessons, didn't she, as Prime Minister? But and they worked. Her voice changed. You can hear it changing. But did her personality change? If you are not a decisive person, can you become one? Cometh the hour, cometh the man, or the woman. So anyway, this is decisive by Wes Streeting. He's actually doing, with regard to his messages exchanged with Peter Mandelson, exactly what he said the party needed to do with regard to a vote on recognising Palestine. He's getting in front of the story. There is a sense, and I don't want to add to the somewhat premature epitaphs, but there is a sense that Keir Starmer doesn't do that, and I think it's fair. He's not decisive. If he was decisive, then he wouldn't change decisions shortly after making them and announcing them. So have a listen to Wes Streeting talking to Sheila Fogarty last week, because it gives you an indication of A, what I'm talking about, and B, why you should be listening to Sheila Fogarty to find out what cabinet ministers are going to do next.
Would you be happy to hand over your work and private phones for examination on the Mandelson appointment if there was a single message to or from you about his appropriateness for the job? Would you be happy to hand over your...
Yes, in my case, and I think that will be the ex based on what we're debating in the Commons, what the Prime Minister has said. Yes, people will be expected to hand over any messages or correspondence relating to Mandelson's appointment. Now, it's easy for me to say yes, because there is no correspondence in my case, but if there were, of course people should be handing this over.
Do you know, I can't even remember which Tories it was that lost their phones. Johnson's got to be on the list, has he? I claimed he had a new phone so the WhatsApp messages couldn't be found. And didn't one fall in it, or was that Rebecca Vardy? I get they're all pretty much a muchness, aren't they? Someone's fell in the sea. Someone's phone fell in the sea. Was that Rebecca Vardy's lawyer, or was that Boris Johnson? Which one fell in the sea, allegedly? Talking about character. Let's have a phone in about whether or not we've lost trust in politics without mentioning Boris Johnson, shall we? That might be fun. Have we lost trust in politics? Don't mention my friend Boris Johnson with his wallpaper and his law-breaking and his proroguing Parliament unlawfully and sending Boris Johnson to Balmoral to lie to the late Queen. Streeting just demonstrating something there that Starmer doesn't demonstrate, for good or for ill. That's an extremely adroit way with which to deal with looming or potential crisis. I was sending messages to Peter Mandelson, and they were warm, and they were indiscreet, and they were arguably disloyal. And here they all are. Bye-bye story. Bye-bye story. Interesting. So, back to the question, what does Starmer need to do? What do you want him to do? What is the plan that you would enact, or the first thing that you would do if you took up the now vacant role of Chief of Staff in Keir Starmer's Downing Street? Richard's in Wokingham. Richard, what do you reckon?
Hi, James. Hello. I'm a first-time caller.
Welcome.
Thanks for bringing some sanity into my and friends' lives.
That's very kind. Thank you, mate.
I'm retired, but my working life was helping organisations change for the better, and I had a very simple blueprint for doing that, which inevitably involved involving employees, and typically it was called Good to Great,
yeah,
which has been stolen by a few people since. But basically it was three stages, if you indulge me.
Of
very
course
simply.
I will. Yeah.
The first stage was platform. So, because I'm a Keir Starmer fan, and I think, but I don't know what his plan is.
Yeah.
I don't know what his vision is. He's full of integrity, and I still believe in him, but he needs to set out a plan. He's not inspiring. He's been a huge disappointment, and I'm a supporter. So, I think he needs to set out his plan, and I'm sure it doesn't translate from a business world into a political world, but naively, here goes. So the first stage is platforming. So that means, typically in the first couple of years, you need to lay down some strong foundations. You need to involve people. You need to make sure you've recruited the right people. The right people are in the right jobs. You put out any fires. So everything he's done around
things like school meals, you know, some of those things which don't get good press. They're all part of that. That things that you're paying people more. So all of that's platforming, and that gives you a context for changing. You know, he's announced things and then gone back at them. I don't call them U-turns. He's adjusted things, but all of that gives you a context for what he's trying to do. It's part of taking the country from good, and let's recognize what we're good at. We all love our country, but we want it to be better. So how do we get to great? And the next stage is then transforming, and that's where you try things. You try things that historically may have, you know, whether it's wealth taxes or land taxes, or you try things, and if they work, great, you keep them. If they don't, then you get rid of them. But it gives you a context, and people can understand you're trying things. It's not, oh, that failed or that worked. So finally is then you keep the things that have worked. You've got the right people in the right jobs. People understand that, you know, the figures start improving, waiting lists coming down, whatever it might be. And you then start performing, which can be at the time of the next election, if you like. People understand what you've been trying to do all the time. You've platformed, you've put out fires, you've set the foundations, you've tried some new things, and now the time is for the UK to be, you know, better than Europe or whatever measures you've put in place.
I like all of this, actually, and you explain it very, very well. I guess the key difference between business and politics, you may disagree, is the level of negativity, the defining of the narrative by outside forces. You know, financial journalists aren't really going to misrepresent your figures or ignore the good news and focus instead upon your HR issues, are they? That's not how financial journalism works, but political journalism sadly does. So I don't know how you break that except by challenging the bogus narrative, which it turns into a form of PMQs, doesn't it? It just turns into, well, you can say U-turn, but actually, what would you rather have? Someone pressing on regardless, despite the fact they've just been shown a cliff edge that wasn't there before, or somebody changing course as a consequence. You can say, so I don't know how, that's that almost the holy grail in all of these conversations, is finding a way to challenge the media ecosystem in which everybody lives and which is obviously corrupt.
Yes, and I don't have the magic answer.
No, no one
does. I like the idea of the regular press conferences, or whatever the right way of getting through to people is. But
yeah, I mean that's it. A touch of the Harold Wilsons, but of course that was in the pre-internet age. I don't know that necessarily is a reason to dismiss it or dispute it. Was it FDR that did the fireside addresses? These are politicians of a very different age and a very different ilk. But just that sense of connection, that sense of leadership, and then it becomes easier perhaps to convey difficulties so that the, what is the enemy of populism? The enemy of populism is reality, of course. And if you share a little bit more reality with the people, then not only do you spike the guns of the populists who sell lies and snake oil and simplistic answers to complicated questions, but you also perhaps muster up or build up the resolve of your own forces, your own army, and even potentially swell their numbers. Richard, thank you. Lovely stuff. 11:17 is the time.
This is LBC.
This year, LBC joins Vauxhall, proud partner of Team GB, in supporting our extraordinary athletes at the Milano Cortina 2026 Olympic Winter Games.
I'm Matt Weston, representing Team GB in the sports skeleton in Milano Cortina 2026. Been a bit of a crazy journey since my last Olympics in Beijing 2022. I've had a pretty successful few years, two-time world champion and three-time Crystal Globe. It's been pretty successful. Can't wait to go back to Milan and represent GB on the highest stage possible.
For your chance to win £1,000 thanks to Vauxhall, head to lbc.co.uk.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted, but then came unexpected site fee increases, and that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold.
holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper, to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato, and spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensify, pasta sauces with serious flavor. Dolmio, yeah!
Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot is £33 million.
I think that deserves a whoop whoop. Thank you, faraway person. Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
19 minutes after 11 is the time. No women today. It's like my 20s all over again. No women callers, no female callers. Don't know why. Just interesting. I like to point it out when it's true. There's no positive discrimination on this programme. You don't get to go on air because we haven't heard from anybody of your perspective. Well, perspective you probably do actually get on air, but just same bar for everybody is what I'm saying. But it would be nice to hear some female voices. And there is a conversation I want to have with you, possibly at 12 o'clock, but it may wait, because I'm not quite sure how to have it. And that is part of the subject matter. That's part of the topic. The fact that I don't know quite how to have the conversation is part of the problem that I want to explore with you, would you believe? The victims of Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell and countless other men, many of whom we know the identity of, some of whom we can speculate about the identity of because of the frequency with which they appear in the files that have been released, or indeed when the rest of the files are released, or simply by looking at the photographs of them leering together at young women. The victims. How do we have a conversation that properly reflects the victims, that properly recognises the victims? I hope that this isn't a question a man asks and every woman listening just shouts a really obvious answer at the radio and I feel ridiculous and ashamed as a consequence. But I suppose if I have a defence, it would be, well, I'm hardly on my own, am I? I'm hardly on my own. How do we do that? How do we steer this? Because even with Mandelson, I don't think that story ignited until the potential leaking of, or the alleged leaking of, or the apparent leaking of sensitive information emerged. And it wasn't enough to take Mandelson off the chessboard. It wasn't enough to take Andrew Windsor off the chessboard. For his own family, he continued as a working royal after the association with a convicted paedophile was established, or he certainly kept his title long after it was established. Questions there for the palace to answer. I wasn't aware. I heard Nick talking about it earlier, that the king is now being heckled about this on public visits. But it wasn't enough for any institution to take people off the chessboard. An association with a known paedophile was not enough to be taken off the chessboard. Mandelson was put back on the chessboard by Keir Starmer. Andrew Windsor was left on the chessboard by his mother and then his brother. Various other areas. I mean, you know, Donald Trump's administration is full of people who were all over the chessboard that Jeffrey Epstein owned. And the victims don't matter. That's a question I'm not sure I'm comfortable asking. Comfortable because I don't know that you'd answer it. But it would be this. It would simply be, is it just proof that victims don't matter? Is that what this story has taught us? That, you know, I guess you could find a certain type of character who would pretend to care if the perpetrators had been brown-skinned, and they will no doubt be asking you to send them money soon so that they continue their brave fight against brown-skinned paedophiles while not giving two hoots about the fact that paedophile apologists, paedophile facilitators, a man who lets every pervert on the planet undress young women on his social media platform if they so desire, they're all on my side, they're all great, but brown paedophiles, they're terrible. Those of us who don't feel our disgust shifting according to the ethnicity of a perpetrator watch this stuff with a curious mixture of horror and a sense of grim inevitability. But does it just mean that the victims don't matter? Nobody really cares. Pretend to care. And I care. I'm not being holier than thou. You know I do. I mean, the work I've done in this field, partly inspired by my own, or rather my schoolmates' experiences at school, is it's all out there. But the institutional absence of care, unless you can use it to indulge some racism, unless you can pretend that you really care, because you can then attack ethnic minorities. You can attack people of Pakistani heritage or all the Muslims, whatever it may be, and then have absolutely nothing to say about Jeffrey Epstein, about Steve Bannon, like one of Nigel Farage's best friends, right? Nathan Gill, the bloke who took bribes from the Kremlin to pollute Western politics, also one of Nigel Farage's best friends. But Steve Bannon was absolutely tight with Epstein years and years and years after he was a convicted paedophile. And he's one of Nigel Farage's best mates. And Nigel Farage leads the Protect Our Women and Girls movement in this country when Stephen Yaxley-Lennon is sleeping off the night before. Nigel bravely steps into the breach. What's he had to say about his close friend and the man he credited with contributing to Brexit? Where's Nigel Protect Our Women? Where's Nigel march outside hotels? Where's Nigel? And now we invite onto a stage a woman who wants to see human beings being burnt in their beds for the crime of being refugees. Where is Nigel Farage when the questions about how on earth he could have entrusted our country to the machinations of somebody like Steve Bannon, the paedophile's friend? What's he got to say about that? Oh, hang on. Apparently he's on the line.
Bird of Manning.
Okay, thank you. I mean, there must be more than that, surely. Somebody's asked him. Somebody's asked him to account for his own appearances in the Epstein files, but much more importantly, his closeness to Steve Bannon, a bloke who was colluding with Epstein to pollute Western politics on the grounds that if they could get enough far-right people into the European Parliament, they would be able to railroad any attempts to regulate cryptocurrency. So I'm not even sure Steve Bannon was a proper racist. That's not, I mean, his motivation was to use the racists to break politics to make money. And guess who his best friend in Britain is?
Bernard Manning.
No, Nigel Farage. And where are the questions about that? Because the victims don't matter. Unless the perpetrators are brown, in which case people like Nigel Farage can pretend that they care. Can pretend that they do. Set fire to people in hotels for the crime of being brown. But my good friend Steve Bannon, who was instrumental in delivering Brexit, I've got absolutely nothing to say to him, about him, or with him, except
Bernard Manning.
Thank you very much. 26 minutes after 11 is the time. Maureen's in Swindon. There you go. What does they say? Ask and seek and you shall find. If you build it, they will come, Maureen. What would you like to say?
Oh, well, you've just been talking about Farage and Bannon and stuff.
Yes.
And you said a few minutes ago...
Well, no, hang on a minute. Sorry to interrupt you. Not just Farage and Bannon, but don't forget also...
Bernard Manning.
Thank you. Carry on, Maureen.
No, sorry. You made a comment about the fact that there were no women calling, and I've been wanting to sort of call you for a while. I'm terribly nervous. This is the first time I've ever been on, so...
Well, it's only me. There's nothing to be nervous about, and it's not as if I'm going to interrupt you and start playing ludicrous clips of Nigel Farage shouting Bernard Manning, is it? Because that would only distract you from what is already a daunting task, Maureen.
No.
I can't wait to hear what you've got to say. Take all the time you need.
First of all, please don't interrupt me because I'll probably forget what I want to say because you're interrupting me. So I am a 76-year-old grandmother, so, I sometimes get sidetracked.
Me too. Well, now I have to interrupt because I feel that you're waiting for me to speak.
Oh, no. What I wanted to say, it was about Keir Starmer,
yes.
Because this is what, you were talking about when you mentioned about women being on the line. One of the things that that I think that Keir Starmer has to think about is the fact that he is different. He has got integrity. I won't go into all the good things about him because I think, those who support him know that very well. But I think his decency and his integrity is his biggest enemy as well.
Mm.
And he plays by the rules. And we know, especially in recent history, politically in this country, you break the rules, you're a bit of a naughty boy, you skate on the edge and you survive, and then you get people saying, oh well, I like Boris, he's a bit of a character, isn't he, despite the fact that he's totally incompetent and totally self-serving. So I think it's his biggest enemy, and one of the things that perhaps he's got the chance to do, apart from setting out his vision, which he needs to do desperately, is to liberate himself from Svengali, all the people that are around him, and just be himself a bit more. I'm not sure whether I'm explaining this very well.
No, you're explaining it brilliantly. And I mean, this is what happens when I don't interrupt people.
What?
You worry that you haven't heard me say anything yet, so you think you might have gone off on a bit of a tangent. So if I'm not here to whip you back onto the straight and narrow, Maureen, at the first opportunity. What if there is no vision?
I think there is, because he wouldn't have got where he is now without having some sort of vision of what he wants Britain to look like.
Mm.
Because from 2020... to 2025, when he actually made the Labour Party electable.
Yes.
I think that's a miracle.
Well, I mean, don't turn me into Mr. Misery Guts, but it would have been, I think anybody could, I think anybody could have won the last election,
well,
really,
maybe
after
so.
14 years.
Yeah.
I think we overlooked that fact with all the talk about Ming
so.
Vases.
You may be right on that one, but I think when a Labour government came in, James, I cried.
Yeah.
Because I thought at last we've got someone, you know, who is really wanting to put the country right after, you know, austerity, Brexit, Liz Truss, COVID, you know, all the awful nonsense that we experienced. So,
yes, and he wasn't that, and he clearly isn't that, and the only people who don't still think that it's important are the people who actually cheer-led and prepared the ground and hurrahed to the rafters all of the things that came before. I mean, I find it extraordinary, Maureen. I've been doing this job now for more years than I care to remember, but the way in which the four donkeys of the crapopolips were inflicted upon this country by the media, in large part, because without the cheering of, you can name them now, make a list as long as your arm, austerity, Brexit, Boris Johnson, Liz Truss, all of these things that have done us untold and unmeasured harm. Some of the harms have been measured, some of it won't be fully understood for a generation. And then they're somehow, A, trying to blame Keir Starmer for things that he inherited, and B, trying to portray him as being Richard Madeley, of all people. I hope you didn't see this morning, because it would have ruined your weekend. Was trying to claim that this scandal somehow proves that Boris Johnson was treated unfairly. I mean, the level of willful, boneheaded ignorance you would need to deploy to arrive at that conclusion is, I mean, genuinely impenetrable to me. You look at that catalogue, especially if you work in the industry, if you are supposedly a journalist, and you know everything from the unlawful proroguing of Parliament through to lying to the Queen, breaking the law, losing your WhatsApps, spending 20 grand of somebody else's money on a sofa and then claiming you couldn't remember where the money had come from, the puking, the partying, the suitcases full of booze when we couldn't even attend our own family's funerals. I mean, that list is absolute. Well, I know it is. I think it's the longest chapter in How They Broke Britain. And then to be in this industry and to claim that somehow Starmer, I mean, it's shame and it's shameful. Shame because admitting mistakes is an impossible and difficult and terrible thing to do. And the more your personality has been framed by denying vulnerability and denying fragility and pretending that you're really strong and tough, the harder it is to admit mistakes. The harder, the more shame stings. Men of a certain age being peculiarly possessed of this phenomenon. But, yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, just let him be him. Whether that proves to be enough or not, only time will tell. Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
Sir Keir Starmer has chaired his first cabinet meeting since telling MPs he won't resign from the top job. Yesterday, he faced calls from the Scottish Labour leader to quit over the Lord Mandelson scandal. In the past half hour, the Welsh First Minister, Eluned Morgan, has backed Sir Keir, but says failures must be confronted honestly. A former Metropolitan Police Inspector has been charged with a series of sexual offences. The charges against John Doyle, who's 53, span a 12-year period until 2024 and relate to one alleged victim. And Birmingham's bin strike is set to continue until at least September. Workers have voted to carry on their industrial action over jobs and pay in the latest ballot. LBC weather cloudy for most, with spells of rain falling heavy at times, drier to end the morning in the south, a high of 13 degrees.
This is LBC.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard this Air France message. Looking to start your journey with a taste of France? Enjoy in-flight French elegance as Paris, the city of light, greets you on your way to the world's most remarkable destinations. Starting March the 29th, enjoy twice daily flights from London Gatwick, connecting via Paris to Asia, Africa, and North America. Elegance is a journey. Air France. To book and for terms and conditions, visit airfrance.co.uk.
Hey, you! Do you ever think the old you wants a new you? You do?
Well, we do too.
Our one-stop
wonder shape
guarantees you a new body, face, and personality. Your friends won't even recognize you. But don't worry. With
wonder shape,
you'll make better, hotter friends. And just like in some...
Really? Don't fall for fads this January. Holland & Barrett give you the facts. Get expert advice on nutrition, supplements and skincare that actually give your body the nourishment it needs. Holland & Barrett.
Enjoy an extra 20% off the village price in the Spring Savings event at Vista Village. From the 13th to the 22nd of February, save at Lululemon, UGG and more. Plus discover experiences, dining offers and member rewards. On select lines and brands. T's and C's apply. See VistaVillage.com. Vista Village. What will you find?
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quadrapillar, Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot, Bears. Kids, put on your swimmers for Jungle Splash.
Yeah, let's go, Mum.
Right. Cannon Arena, Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go-Karts, Wave Runner 2, Magical Wood, and Cafe.
Nutcatch Adventure Park.
The sun goes on and on and on and on.
Book now at nutcatch.com.
That's it. We need a bigger car.
Smart speaker. What's an award-winning SUV?
The Tucson is an award-winning midsize SUV and is available for a 24-hour test drive.
They look great. And it's a self-charging hybrid too.
Smart speaker. Search offers on a Hyundai Tucson.
The Tucson is available with 2 years 0% APR. And it's Hyundai, by the way.
Discover the Hyundai Tucson self-charging hybrid. Ends 31st of March, 25% deposit, finance subject to status. Hyundai UK is a credit broker, not a lender. Terms apply.
At Pets in a Pickle, we know what it's like welcoming a new pet into the family. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
11:36. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where Henry Reilly has just moonwalked into the studio to bring us up to date with the latest developments in the land of Nigel Farage. Any updates on yesterday? Have we found out where the new leader of UKIP in Wales, sorry, Reform in Wales, who is not the one that's currently in jail for taking bribes from a Kremlin stooge for polluting British discourse by spreading Russian propaganda? Although Vladimir Putin, as far as we're aware, is still the world politician that Nigel Farage admires most. We need to make this clear. The bravest man he's ever met is Donald Trump, but the politician he admires most is Vladimir Putin, and is the Welsh leader of Reform UK. Do we know where he lives yet? Does he live in Bath, as many people believe, and as he told his colleagues in Barnet. He was moving to?
Yeah.
Or does he actually live in Wales?
So we're still waiting, because we need to get clarity from the electoral roll as to where he is living. It's true to say, according to reports, that when he was leader, he's obviously the Reform leader in Wales, he was the Tory leader of Barnet Council in North London. He told his colleagues there he was moving to Bath. but is now the Reform leader in Wales. At one point was concurrently in Wales whilst being a councillor for Finchley Hall in North
Can't
London.
Can't he just give you his address and shut all this nonsense down?
I've asked for a postcode, so I'll let you know when I get an update on that.
Okay, well, hang on, I think we've got a postcode.
Oh, yeah.
Can you read it?
Bernard Manning.
Oh, no. Oh, flipping
it. I thought it was a postcode.
Sorry, no, I thought it was a postcode. Okay, so the other story that we had a look at yesterday was this letter that had, in clear breach of electoral law, I think, been sent to many homes in the constituency, the Manchester constituency, where the next big by-election takes place.
This is a letter that was circulated in Gorton and Denton from... Oh, we've had confirmation, Patricia Clegg, not that there was any doubt, but she is a person, she's 74 years old, and this was a handwriting-style letter that was given out. The issue is, and this has been... There's been an apology from the West London printing company, that it didn't have the Reform imprint on it. However, further criticism for Reform from Patricia Clegg's son, who's Andrew Clegg. Now, he is a British Army veteran who said that Reform have now lost his support as a result. Now, this is because of comments that have emerged on Facebook, purported comments below Matthew Goodwin's posts. And to remind listeners, he is the Reform candidate for that upcoming by-election later this month. He has commented, the son, Andrew Clegg, saying that his mother has been hounded online as a result, and that, crucially, she never gave Reform UK sign-off. Now, Reform UK say that she is a party member, Patricia Clegg, and a spokesperson said, "We've been in contact with her and her family. We apologise for the distress caused by a genuine error." But the son, though, has said her name has been plastered all over everywhere because of Reform.
They didn't ask her. They asked her first.
Well, Andrew, her son, Reform say they did ask her, right. But her son Andrew, based on these Facebook comments, yeah, would suggest he is alleging that they did not get final sign off before using her name.
And now she's getting pushed around from pillar to post by various people online and what have you, and the poor woman presumably doesn't quite know how this has happened.
The allegation from her son is that she didn't really know what she was getting herself in for, would be the implementation.
The printing company that's taken all the blame for this, I read somewhere, has done about £1.5 million worth of business with Nigel Farage's outfit over the last couple of years. I don't know why I feel the need to mention that, but I just thought that I would because I really like numbers.
Me too.
You'll like this one. You ready?
Yeah.
So, they're skating on thin ice in Manchester.
That's a good one. This is with regards to... we're moving on story now. So this is a West Northamptonshire council, which is one of the ten councils that Reform UK run. They are in a spot of bother because they installed a festive ice rink that was there, if you live in the local area, it was there from the 4th of December to the 4th of January. They said that they broke even, which... Great, that's a very nice thing to do, to have an ice rink in the local council, exactly what local authorities should be doing. The issue, though, is that according to a Freedom of Information request, the ice rink actually cost £335,000 and would suggest that Reform then didn't break even, because they said they broke even, as I say. So the cost of it, £335,000, I know you like numbers, James, as you've said. In terms of ticket and bar sales, it raised £123,000. Which, if you do the maths, is about more than 200 grand difference. Not to tell you that, because as you say, you like your numbers.
The
shortfall that Reform had claimed is made up from the UK Shared Prosperity Fund. So government funds went to sort of cover 70 grand
worth. Could have been spent on anything.
Could have been spent on anything,
including military heroes.
And £107,000 was from the council's culture and events budget, and for a bit from the town council and other areas. So the opposition parties are saying you can't break even based on other funds. I mean, you have to sort of sold tickets.
You break even by covering your costs with your sales.
Yeah, quite. Which there's a £200,000 shortfall, so say opposition parties.
David's been in touch. He says, what's happened to Henry's Reform erotic novels feature?
Yeah, I need to go through the new defectors and see if there's any more.
We found a couple. I mean, we
had a few. Yeah.
from Northamptonshire to Worcestershire. I've kind of spoiled this one when I was talking earlier to Alan in Manchester.
Yes.
But this is another, more evidence of their cost-cutting skills.
Well, I think it's important to say, so this is not the Shop Window Council. That was Kent.
Kent. Yeah.
But this is nonetheless a huge local authority, Worcestershire County Council. This has been controversial because there are some opposition councillors who say that reform promised to lower council tax or certainly not to increase it. Richard Tice, who's the deputy leader, has said Worcestershire's finances were the worst of any reform council, and Jo Monk, who's the council leader, she was in the previous Tory administration as well at one point, she has described the finances as a mess and said the council needs £71 million in exceptional financial support to avoid a bankruptcy notice. The budget gap currently, according to council documents, looks to be around £74.3 million. And bosses have now applied for £71.9 million from the exceptional finance support from the government. But the real kicker, and hence why we spoke to David Taylor yesterday, I played a clip for you, who's the councillor who left live on TV, that's over the council tax. You can currently, the maximum limit is around 4.99% to increase council tax by. The reform-led council wants to increase it by 9.99%, which is 5%, I know you like your numbers, above the maximum limit.
They said this is all predicated on the electoral promises that there is loads of waste and we will go in and save it. And then they get in and they look for the waste. And amazingly, after 14 years of austerity, it turns out there isn't any.
And they've set up this DOLGE, which is the Department
Dolge?
Of Local...
Why do you say it like that?
DOLGE? Because Department of Local Government Efficiency. It's not DOGE, it's DOLGE.
Because that's gone really well.
But this is I think they would say it's...
The pound shop, but the Temu version of DOGE.
In early stages.
DOLGE. Right, but they're not finding any money to save, except the money they found yesterday that they hadn't found at all.
Well, in Worcestershire, they've got to find £71 million in exceptional financial support, but that's not through savings, that's through the government.
Have they thought of an ice rink?
I don't know, I'll find out.
And this is a story, of all the fun we have together on the radio, I'm not sure we've ever covered a story less suited for this medium than the one you're about to tell us about now.
Yes, this is a barbers in Glasgow, in Partick, and which is sort of Glasgow West End, and they have decorated the front of this Turkish barbers shop with pictures of Nigel Farage with an array of different haircuts. This is because, and there is a serious point behind it, of comments that Nigel Farage made on this station speaking to Nick Ferrari.
Any market town in the country, you'll find half a dozen barber shops. You know the drill, you go in, no customers, cash only, Lamborghini out the back, and it's been going on for years. Years, and I've been banging on Nick about it forever on social media and talking there to LBC's Henry Riley. And I've just been astonished that the police have done nothing. And we know, of course, they're not Turkish anyway. They're Iraqi or Iranian or Kurdish. In fact, there's probably half a dozen crossing my channel right now that'll be in one of the shops next week.
Oh, dear.
That was sad.
Who said rhetoric was there? Well, you'd stick your own little advert in there.
Well, no, it's because I'd asked him a question at a press conference. This is yonks ago, James, right. But it was on your show as well. I asked them what the issue with Turkish barbershops was, and he said I hadn't ever been out of London, which is not true. Oh. This particular shop is run by Ali, who runs it, and he got the Rebel Bear, which is an artist, got in touch with him about decorating it. I mean, as you say, you need to sort of see the images, but it's
well, can you talk
Nigel
through them?
Farage,
can you describe
with different haircuts.
In the style of a hair correspondent.
Well, what I think is David Bowie. It looks very much like David Bowie's haircut.
Which era, Henry? Come on. Aladdin Sane? Tin Machine?
Oh, I don't
know. Ziggy Stardust?
You can't say
Bowie's haircut, honestly.
Started in Tolbert.
It's like saying Nigel Farage's policy platform. It changes every 30 seconds.
Well, I'll tell you what. While I get into these pictures, I spoke with
Labyrinth.
Ali, barber. Ali the barber, who's done this outside his shop, and he told me more.
In my opinion, the way the Nigel Farage was talking about the Turkish barbers and the businesses, it's been kind of damaging them and like putting them down. In my opinion, it was kind of unfair to just see all the shops, Turkish barbers, in one eye, and it says they are kind of scams and like they're all empty and they don't pay taxes. Myself accept court in my business and trying to be as legit as possible. And then I didn't kind of how to say, not sure why he just picked on us like that.
And what customers saying about it? When because there's quite a few, from what I can make out, there's seven pictures of Nigel Farage on the front of your shop now.
Yeah, I've been moving him about. Right. But to be honest, my shop is now turned out like a museum. Everybody's just coming and taking pictures. But I can promise you that 10 out of 10 people are happy and they just thumbs up and they're telling me good job.
That's Ali, who runs this barbers in Glasgow.
So there's one which are the kind of sub-merchant ivory curtains that everybody had in the 1980s. That's bottom right. You're probably too young to remember that. Everyone had that kind of centre parting. It's a bit Manchester. You remember that look with the Manchester parting, the curtains?
I think it looked like Roger Allam from The Thick of It.
It does a bit, yeah. It does a bit. Yeah. The one at the top is extraordinary. That's more sort of Flock of Seagulls. That's, again, a 1980s sort of George Michael, but with a touch of Limahl or Nick Kershaw just on the right-hand side of it. There's one that is
David Beckham, maybe, or
well, kind of. It's got spiky on top and then sort of fade with some, what do they call it, is it carving? What do you do when you put shapes in it with the razor? Is there a word for that?
Oh, I don't know.
Oddly, there's none which feature him just with sort of quite a long fringe that comes down over his forehead and a little moustache, but maybe that'll be in the next tranche of photographs that are released. What's the name of the barber's shop?
Well, there's one, that's a good question, G11 is the name of the, G11 or
there's
G11.
More as well.
I should have asked. Yeah, there's loads.
There's one where he looks like,
There's one where he's got
Dumb and Dumber.
Things sticking out of his nose as well for the, you know,
for the get the nostril clearing. Yes.
What
an imaginative business. That's the kind of entrepreneurial spirit that we should be cheering to the rafters, not accusing of lies.
And as Ali said, the people are popping in just to get photographs as well. It's become a sort of museum, a shrine, his shop.
That's almost it, is it?
Yeah, that's it for today.
I've got one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it was four stories yesterday that should be receiving rather more attention, given where Reform currently sit in the polls. Four more today, and it's only Tuesday.
I'll keep an eye out.
I've got five. I've got a fifth one.
Oh, have you?
Who said, and I should make it clear, that a full list of all the candidates that are running in Gorton and Denton will be available on our website if it is currently required to be. It's just me covering my backside, because I'm terrified of by-elections. You know, the only time I've ever had an Ofcom complaint upheld, and I have received hundreds, if not thousands, over the years, was over a by-election, Henry. I'm not going to say any more about it.
Right.
I get very nervous. But you can find a full list of all the candidates in the Gorton and Denton by-election up on the LBC website. Can you find pictures of Nigel Farage's variety of haircuts? Yeah, Eleanor as well. Is that up? Do we know? Well, it should be. I don't want to miss a trick in socials. Who said very recently that Nigel Farage had no answers to Britain's problems? Who said that if he became Prime Minister, support for him would collapse quickly due to him being, quotes, fairly divisive in the country? Who said that the Reform Party doesn't have the answers to Britain's problems, and that they would alienate voters in much the same way that Liz Truss had done during her disastrous premiership, describing his sort of traditional Thatcherite economics as being very unpopular. Do you know who that was? For story number five on day two of this week.
I'm not going to phone a friend. I'd take a punt here. I'd assume the Labour candidate.
Well, no. Actually.
No.
It's the Reform UK candidate in Gorton and Denton.
Ah.
Describing the leader of Reform UK as being pretty much useless and deeply divisive. I don't know if that's stopped clock twice a day territory, is it, or not? But as I say, a full list of candidates in that by-election is available at the LBC website. Great stuff. We can't stretch this out for another day, can we?
We'll see what happens.
It's 11:50.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Well, on the one hand, it's a desperately simple story, and we've seen it so many times before. It is a Prime Minister attempting to cling to power. Secretary of State for Energy Security and Net Zero, Ed Miliband. Having been leader of the party, you must accept that advisers advise, ministers decide. It was his decision.
Yeah, and he took responsibility for that yesterday.
Well, he's blamed everyone but. He's blamed Morgan McSweeney, he's blamed Mandelson's lies, lies, lies. This is supposedly a barrister. It doesn't sit well with the
public. Well, that's not what he said last night. He's totally been open. He made a mistake. He made a big mistake. Mandelson should never have been appointed.
Your leader is the Thomas Frank of politics, like the Spurs boss facing relegation.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
I'm Leah, and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right, and my GP referred me to the CDC. Had some blood tests done, and within 24 hours, I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Geographical and other restrictions. Minimum spend £60 and charges apply. New customers only. Maximum saving £20. Terms at Ocado.com.
Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot is £33 million.
I think that deserves a whoop whoop. Thank you, faraway person. Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
And when teams feel supported, they can achieve...
Sorry. Just had even more of my team are off ill.
Have you tried Benenden Health? It's easy to set up. They've got a GP helpline you can book 24-7.
Where were we?
A coffee break, hopefully.
Press play on your people's health with a wide range of healthcare services for less than £16 per employee per month. Search Benenden for Business. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
A Thames Link train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to skip traffic and glide to wherever you need to be. With headspace to focus on more important matters. Like if that cloud is a starfish or sunflower. Fast journeys without the rush with great deals at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
James O'Brien on LBC.
It's 11:54. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where you could be forgiven for forgetting that the conversation we've been having since 10 o'clock this morning is about the rebirth, the resurrection, the revivification of Keir Starmer's premiership, the survival, which is something that has now, I think, pretty much been established. Although this time yesterday, you'd have got pretty short odds on him going. And they probably got a little bit shorter after the leader of Scottish Labour, Anas Sarwar, came out calling for him to go. A really weird intervention there from somebody holding that particular position. Not least because photographs immediately appeared of him boasting on social media about what great mates he was with Peter Mandelson and how much he enjoyed meeting him long after he'd been appointed ambassador to Washington, D.C. But, I mean, unless he was harbouring extraordinarily optimistic ambitions of his own, it was a really weird thing to do. And it worked as a, if you want to go full conspiracy theory, unless he was in on it from the start. And the whole idea was that that intervention from someone senior and junior in the great scheme of things would somehow galvanise the show of support and unity that subsequently followed. But what does he need to do next? Well, and a question I might ask you periodically for the next few years: what do we actually want from a prime minister, whoever is in the job? What do we actually want? It's a slightly harder question to answer that than you might have hoped or imagined. Mohammed is in Stockton-on-Tees. Mohammed, what would you like to say?
Hi, James.
Hello, mate.
I personally think Keir Starmer won't survive after the Gorton by-election. However, if I was if I thought he could survive, I think the only way he's going to survive is if he takes big decisions. One thing that it frustrates me is that nobody's willing to take on reform, nobody's willing to take on Farage, right? What he needs to do now to save his premiership is basically go gung-ho, make big hard decisions like going back to the European Union. I think that's what he needs to do, make decisions that will upset the status quo, upset the likes of reform, because we have consistently failed. You know, when you try to out-reform reform, you fail. Mm. I'm not a Labour fan. I'm a Lib Dem, right? But sure. I believe that you need to take them on. And I go, Farage, he isn't that great. And I actually agree with Matt Goodwin, that, yeah, Farage, if he ever did become Prime Minister, he'd be useless because he actually has no idea what he's talking about. He would destroy the NHS, the care sector. And if you take him on, say if you say to him, okay, in 6 months' time, we're going to have a referendum on going back in the European Union, that would absolutely put the cat amongst the pigeons and it will absolutely destroy reform in Tory because they don't know what to do then. Right, and it will absolutely give him a legacy that, well, so however bad Starmer was, he brought us back into the European Union, we made a mistake, and people wanted to go back in, and he took the decision. And I think that's the only solution. But he has to be tough. In a way, Britain is governable, but I believe, you know, Lee Kuan Yew from Singapore, we need somebody that basically solidifies our country, unifies our country. And
this is the problem, actually, that you've just stumbled headlong into. I agree that we need to unify the country, but I don't think that another referendum is the way to do that.
But the thing is...
Don't go galloping off into the distance, because, I mean, let's just recognise, because I'd like you to be right about both of those things. But I don't think anyone would argue that the referendum was a unifying force in British politics last time round. So what makes you think that it would be this time round?
So what I think is that last time they had a referendum on the Scottish independence, right? Mm. I always believe that when you ask the public for their opinion, it should be respected, right? Mm. However, the fact that we realised we made a decision, which wasn't very good for our economics, we can make that decision again and explain to the people. And also, with all due respect, Jeremy Corbyn put a half-hearted fight into that referendum.
That's disgusting. How dare you? It was quarter-hearted.
So from there onwards, if we are honest with the people and tell the truth to the British people, people are much more likely to believe us. One of the biggest things what the general public are saying, 55% of people do not trust politicians because they don't believe them now. We have to be honest to the British people, saying we're stuck, we need help, this is how we're going to fix it. A lot of time we're trying to use our magic fairy godmother to fix the problems that we can't fix in a year, in a month.
I tell you what I'm taking away is uncomfortable truths. So you've given them something to dance around, a maypole, and that's great, and I agree with you. If not an actual referendum, I think that might be too much to ask, but just quietly, I said all along, practically for 10 years, Mohammed, long before you started listening, that we would sort of rejoin, but we'd never announce it, that we'd bring back freedom of movement, but we'd call it liberty of motion, that they'd start undoing all of the stupid things that were done, but that our media ecosystem was so toxic that they wouldn't actually be able to use the same words that they'd used last time. They just let people who called for Brexit or supported Boris Johnson, who thought Liz Truss was a genius, to cover their blushes by giving them just enough room to pretend that they weren't undoing all of the idiocy that they had done. But a customs union, something like that. But go big and do the uncomfortable truths as well. Tell people the stuff that they need to hear about our demographics, for example, and about the collapse in the care sector, regardless of who's in charge, if we don't start addressing the fact that we've got an ageing population and a falling birth rate. Look at all the stuff that is not opinion but is counting, and calibrate your political platform and your policy offer according to reality. But that involves explaining reality to the population, and reality is often not pretty, and it is full of uncomfortable truths. And that, after 2 hours, is the opposite of populism. Uncomfortable truths and difficult answers. Solutions and improvements that are incremental and ultimately transformative, but are feasible and plausible, and not the kind of thing that you can scribble on the back of a Benson and Hedges packet.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, Sir Keir Starmer has met with his cabinet following one of the most difficult days of his premiership so far. The Prime Minister's top team have rallied around him after the Scottish Labour leader Anna Sawar urged him to go. But the Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch has told LBC that she believes it's a stay of political execution for Sir Keir.
The cabinets think they've bought the Prime Minister time, but not much. They are all terrified because if he goes, most of them will go as well. It'll be a new cabinet. They're trying to save their jobs. They're not trying to save the jobs of people out in the country. Unemployment has increased every single month under this cabinet. Whether it's Rachel Reeves or Bridget Phillipson or Wes Streeton, they are all as bad as each other.
In the past hour, the Welsh First Minister Eluned Morgan has publicly backed Sir Keir to stay on as Prime Minister, but says failures must be confronted honestly.
In other news this lunchtime, a former Metropolitan Police inspector has been charged with a series of sexual offences. The charges against John Doyle, who's 53, span a 12-year period until 2024 and relate to one alleged victim. He's due to appear in court tomorrow. The new Archbishop of Canterbury has admitted the Church of England has fallen tragically short at safeguarding victims of abuse. Dame Sarah Mullally has been making her first address to its parliament since taking over. She says the Church must strive to be a stable presence in an unstable world.
I pray that the thread running through my time as Archbishop will be that of nurturing confidence and hope, rooted not in institutions, but in God and the gospel of Jesus Christ.
Bin workers in Birmingham have voted to extend their long-running industrial action for another 6 months. The Unite Union is in a dispute with the City Council over pay and jobs. And around 100 flood warnings remain in place across England as rain continues. The Environment Agency estimates at least 300 properties have been flooded in recent weeks. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 23 at £10,361. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.14. LBC weather, cloudy for most, with spells of rain falling heavy at times. Showers developing across the south throughout the afternoon, a high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use.
Interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo. Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with 3 tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after 12 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. A complete change of pace next and indeed change of topic. I will work on the question that I shared with you about half an hour ago, how we steer the conversation about the Epstein files back to his victims. I know you probably think I don't do any work at all. I just turn up at 10 o'clock, surprise myself with the bilge that comes pouring out of my gob as soon as the light comes on. But I do like to think about things, and I don't want to jump into that topic until I've got some of my ducks in a row, until I know roughly what it is. I also need to address my own culpability a little bit and try to work out why I wasn't more disgusted when Mandelson's job was announced. It's possible I didn't know. That was the interesting thing, wasn't it, about the conversation we had with Jim Pickard, the deputy political editor of the Financial Times, who did this story, who literally presented Starmer with the evidence, or told him that he'd stayed in touch long after the original conviction for soliciting a child for prostitution. And maybe, but again, that plays, why didn't we know? Because we don't care enough. Anyway, that's something that is coming up on the programme soon. And if you want to share your thoughts on how we conduct that conversation, I am all ears and eyes. So I've got two conversations this hour, which both are linked to children in much nicer ways, of course, than one of them is, at least. And one never works. And I think I've worked out why. Parents are being told to scroll through their children's social media every week. This is official government advice that you have a weekly check-in with your children, that you look through their favourite apps together, you ask questions about the content. And that's nice, right? Whether it's a good idea or not, I'll let you decide. But I've never got this one off the ground, and I've suddenly realised why. It's because you don't want to tell me. And I'm going to alienate every potential caller to this programme now. So the massive constituency of parents who do snoop on their children's activity online or beyond aren't going to ring me and tell me because they're too embarrassed. And now I'm about to alienate the people who might ring me and tell me because they're not too embarrassed, and that's because you're shameless. That's because you've got a face a bit like a cat's bum, you know, one of those people like that. You go, I snoop on my children all the time. Child's place, children should be seen and not heard. So the first bunch of people, say 90% of the cohort of parents who snoop on their children, aren't going to ring me because you're too embarrassed. And the 10% who might ring me aren't going to ring me now because I've just compared your face to a cat's bum. And who would ring me and tell me, yes, I snoop on my child? I did it on, it was a Harlan Coben novel years ago. And the mum had installed keyboard tracking software. At the time, this all sounded like the future to me. I appreciate it all sounds a bit antediluvian now. But the mum had installed keyboard tracking software, so you could log on and you could just follow exactly what was being typed onto the keyboard by your child without them knowing that you were doing it. And I remember reading it, and my children would have just been about the right age to have been intrigued and entranced by this. I was absolutely fascinated by it. But in the back of my brain, I've got this list of subjects that should be great for us to talk about and have never quite worked. I can't remember what else is on the list. It'll come to me in a moment. There'll be other things. But that was that's one of them. The idea of sharing stories about snooping on our children. Part of the problem, of course, is that I've never done it. So I can't give you that little nugget of lived experience from my own life. Part of the problem is I don't actually have a strong opinion on it. Keylogging software, it's called. I don't have a strong opinion on it because if I say, oh, it's absolutely disgusting, it's so outrageous, I can't believe you're doing it, you may as well lock them up and throw away the key. You ring me and say, well, we discovered that our child was being groomed by a paedophile. And if we hadn't been using the keylogging software, then we would never have known that it was going on. And of course, if I had a strong opinion the other way, then someone would ring me and say, well, my parents were snooping on me and I haven't spoken to them in 30 years because they interfered in my life in every way imaginable. One of those stories sounds worse than the other, right? How would you have felt? So what have you discovered? Do you do it? Because as Lee says, it's not snooping, it's keeping your child safe. Well, where does that end? You see? I did have strong opinions back in the day, before I became a parent, or before my children were of a relevant age, about giving children phones for safety reasons, on the grounds that if some nasty piece of work were going to abduct your child, the very first thing they were going to do was lob the phone out of the window. The idea that having a phone in your child's pocket at a time of peril or difficulty would somehow protect them from peril or difficulty struck me at best as naive, at worst as ridiculous. But how far would you go? I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, is James having a phone-in about why this isn't a phone-in? And the answer to that at the moment is yes. But I have got something else in my pocket. I have got a plan B for this hour. Because what I would like to do is ask you what you discovered. 03456060973. And if you haven't really discovered anything yet, how do you address the accusation that you are snooping? Where's the line between snooping and keeping them safe? Can you defend what you do? And I generationally, we missed this boat, and thank God there is nothing that has happened in our family that makes me wish that we'd got on it. What happens when your child finds out? Can you do it secretly without your child? What would happen? You said, that's why you can't ring me. I can't ring you and tell you, James, because my kid doesn't know. They're 25 now, they've got a mortgage and 7 children, but if they knew that I'd been snooping on them when they were 15, they'd never speak to me again. Did your parents snoop on you? You see, there's so many questions here, no one's going to answer any of them. Did your parents snoop on you, and how did you feel when you found out? 03456060973. Did you snoop on your children? Yes, I did, but I'm not going to tell you, James. Prove me wrong on 03456060973. What did you discover? Hit the numbers now, you will get through. And is that it? I mean, I can't do a phone-in on why this isn't a very good phone-in. Why has this never soared? Because I don't think it has. I could be wrong. Can you remember any calls over the years when we've done this that made you go, oh, my goodness me. Oh, no wonder he's got the biggest audience going on. I mean, what? Wow. Whew. I don't think we've ever done it. And you know how my brain works, right? It drives me nuts, this. Why have I not found the key to unlock what is clearly rich territory for sharing our experiences? What are the best shows we do together? Shared experiences. Shared experiences that we can learn from, that we can move on from. Why is that? I hate it. Special prizes today for anyone who can text me with other things in this category. Topics that I feel should provide brilliant phone-ins, but which I, your ludicrous and humble presenter, has never quite managed to get right. Never quite got the question right, but we know there's a brilliant topic in there. There was one recently, I told you at the time, I said I love this subject, but I've never quite got the phone in up and running. This is one of them. 03456060973 is the number you need if you want to help me today try and buck the trend of mediocre phone-ins whenever we've addressed this subject and actually produce something special. But that's only half of the challenge for this hour, because I am reverse engineering failure. Phone lines are filling up now, so I'm not going to have any phone lines for the subject that I see as a bit easier, but which, oh, now the phone lines are full, so I can't set up a second subject, even though I don't think the first one's going to be very good. What are we going to do, Keith? I've filled up the phone lines with the sub, with the I've only gone and filled up the phone lines with the topic that I don't think will be very good. And now I haven't got any left for the topic that I know is an absolute banker. I said banker. What? Maybe we need to stick with the subject that we don't think is going to be very good and only move on if all of the people waiting to speak to Eleanor and Rebecca turn out to be... Don't tell them I said this. If they're all a bit pants, then we'll do the second topic. And we'll come back at 12:15 and pretend that none of this has happened. So we'll run through everybody that's on the switchboard now, see if we've got any... I'm not going to read out their names, that wouldn't be fair, because they can rewind live radio and bust me for indiscretion. We'll find out whether there's anything good there or not. And if there is, we'll continue with the... Well, I want to do both anyway, because the other one is the subject closest to my heart. Have you read a headline more dispiriting this week than this one? Reading nearly as niche as stamp collecting. Well, I don't know why they're picking on stamp collectors. It's just statistical. I collected stamps as a kid. I've still got my album somewhere, but if they were worth anything, they'd be worth nothing now, because I used to use those little gummy things to stick the stamps in the actual stamp album. And I think if you want to make real money out of stamps, they have to be completely pristine and untouched. Who the hell sold things you lick to stick stamps to stamp albums? You know, they were like little folded bits of polythene. Do you know what I'm talking about? No. Anyway, reading is now almost as niche as stamp collecting in terms of the number of children that do it. This actually breaks my heart. 33% of children aged 8 years old and over say that they enjoy reading in their free time. And it wasn't brilliant 2 decades ago. It was only 51%. But it's plummeted to 33% now. And I can't think of anything more distressing in the context of non-traumatic childhood issues than not reading books. I don't care how seductive video games are. I don't care how brilliant technology is. I don't care. All the things that you can instill in your child that are like planting acorns in their mind and then stepping back while magnificent oak trees grow without you having to do anything about it. You don't even have to water it. Once it's sprouted, it's off. And they will water it themselves, and they'll nurture it and care for it and tend it and prune it and climb it and enjoy lying in its shade for the rest of their lives. But the parents sow the seeds. The parents sow the acorns. And the children benefit for the rest of their lives. So, topic number one. Snooping. 03456060973. Topic number two. I'm not going to have a go at you. I was about to say, turn it into a traditional, combative and divisive radio phone-in. I'm right, aren't I? It's all the parents' fault. I'll do that another day. Don't think that I'm denying myself that pleasure permanently, but I don't think it's much help today. Imagine a parent listening to this who has tried and failed. How do you get a kid who doesn't want to read to read? How did they get you to read? Actually, that's an even better question, because that way we avoid sounding a little bit holier than thou. How did you break the spell? How was the spell broken for you? You were not a reader. I don't care what age you were when it happened, whether you were 8 or 80, actually. But the younger the better in the context of people listening to this wondering what they can do with their parents. But what broke it for you? What turned you from non-reader to reader? Was it a person that did it? A book, an experience, could have been an illness, I suppose, a long confinement, as the Victorians would have said. What turned you into a reader when you... Because I was always a reader. I can't remember not being a reader. And I would credit Mum and Dad with that. I can't remember not being a reader. And my reading age was a bit ahead of a curve because I started school quite early because I think Mum couldn't wait to get me out of the house. And I'd hoover up books, still do. Reading. Absolutely love it. So I don't know what it would be like to be a non-reader, to be old enough to remember that you weren't a reader. Do you see what I mean? So obviously none of us were readers at 6 months old, but if you can remember not being a reader, oh, I wasn't a reader at primary school, James, or I wasn't a reader until year 12. So you can remember not being a reader and then you became a reader. What happened to change you and to give you the acorn that could then grow into the kind of oak tree that nothing else comes close to in the context of your inner life, your richness, your exposure to experiences and other people's perspectives, your ability to escape from the quotidian and find solace in the fantasy, the things that books can give you. Oh, I could write a book about it. Imagine not having that in your life. And if you don't have to imagine, because you don't, I kind of wonder how I can help you. So there you go. Snooping on your children, which won't work as a phone-in, and helping people who don't read, don't want to read, it's not a question of dyslexia, this, helping people who don't want to read to realise that they really should read. It's 12:17.
LBC. Nothing beats that electric feeling of live sport. As the proud automotive partner of Team GB, Vauxhall is supporting Britain's extraordinary athletes through every nail-biting, glue-to-the-box moment. Vauxhall is working towards a better future for our nation with its electric vehicle range, including the compact Vauxhall Combo Electric Van, made in Britain for Britain. Head to lbc.co.uk and tell us about your own extraordinary work feats to win £1,000.
Why are you abseiling down the front of your house, Ross? You have a staircase.
I like doing things the hard way, Albert.
Try something easier, Ross. Get cheaper off-peak energy. It's available at different times, like during the day or weekends. Just get a smart meter and choose a flexible scheme or tariff.
Ooh, I could batch cook some quiche.
Perfect. With a smart meter, getting cheaper energy is easier than you think.
Eligibility varies. Action required. Schemes and tariffs available to selected customers.
Music, news, celebrities, socials, entertainment, podcasts, video.
The world of media and entertainment is a world we all turn to every second that we can. And university isn't for everyone. So, if you're leaving school, take a look at joining Global Academy in year 14 to take a unique course in creative enterprise and kickstart your media career. Get industry experience, develop your entrepreneurial skills, and it's free. Apply now at globalacademy.com.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV, and here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead.
I can see why they're into it.
Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Costs and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/cleanenergy.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
19 minutes after 12 is the time. A couple of people questioning whether or not Henry Reilly was telling us the truth when he was describing the Glasgow barber's shop that has lots of pictures of Nigel Farage in the window. I can assure you it's true. I'll let you know if and when it appears on the lbc.co.uk website. But it is, you can tell from my text messages that people have had a look at it. Andrew's been in touch. He says, I've just seen Nigel Farage with a top knot. That's it. I'm done for the day. Rich corrects me on one of the descriptions that I deployed. He says, that's not flock of seagulls, James. That's flock of sea hails. That's very strong. And Joe's been in touch to say, one is clearly a muppet. I'm sorry. One is clearly a mullet. They're all muppets. And this is good. Please don't say my name. I'm getting a lot of messages that begin with those words at the moment, but the chance to prove me wrong is still in place. I used to check both my boys' phones when they were asleep all through senior school, when they were at the age when they were themselves checking porn. So I had to have that awkward conversation with them without telling them that I'd seen it on their phones, and they still don't know what I used to do. They are both adults now. You're going to find that if you've got a teenage boy in your house. Whether back in the day it was magazines under the mattress or now it's going to be on the phone. But what does it achieve? What does snooping achieve? And when you look back on what you did, do you feel, validated? I kind of hope you didn't, because that means you found something awful. Or a little bit guilty that you impinged upon their privacy. Would you read your child's diary? You wouldn't. Then why would you look at their phone? Carl's in Exeter to kick things off. Carl, what would you like to say?
I'm a snooper, first.
My name's Carl and I'm a snooper. No, don't.
My name's Carl and I'm a snooper and I'm in Exeter. Both my now adult boys know this.
Yeah.
So we had the general rule in our house, and they're now both adults. We had the general rule in our house is you've got the internet, you can go anywhere you want on the internet, but everywhere you do go is logged by the house server, and I can have a look at it at any point in time.
Wow, yeah.
And there's an extra bit to that.
No,
and
I'm all ears.
And you can see where I've been as well.
Can they bypass it?
They tried.
Did they?
Yeah, they tried VPNs and things like that, and they tried to put stuff on their phone that allowed them to thing. But I'm an IT professional, and I worked in cybersecurity.
Yes.
And the answer was, well, you can try, but I'll know that you've tried, and then we'll have a discussion about why you were trying.
So what did you identify them having looked at that made you concerned?
Well, nothing that overly concerning, because, you know, teenage boys are going to look at pornography, yeah.
Yeah.
There was some misogynistic stuff that I didn't really quite like.
Okay.
There was some online gambling or attempting to do online gambling, which we had a very serious conversation about. But, you know, they knew I was going to look and they accepted I was going to look. And, yeah, I mean, they were
No regrets. I mean, would they have gone to... I mean, I don't want it to sound like you've unlocked this entire subject.
No, I haven't.
No, I'm talking to myself now, Carl, not you.
Right.
Because if they really wanted to hide stuff from you, they still could and would. But what I like about your approach is it's simultaneous. Well, it recognised that they're on the cusp of childhood and adulthood, didn't it? It simultaneously acknowledged that you're going to do things that you wouldn't necessarily want me to bring up at the dinner table, but I'm also going to do things that you would expect a dad to do, which is just to keep an eye on things and make sure that they haven't gone too mad. So did they know what you accessed in the content? I presume you weren't looking at misogyny, but there was probably a bit of pornography there, was there?
No, not really.
No?
That's not my style. They would ask me questions about some of the things I was reading and why I was reading those sort of websites in terms of some of it was to do with work, some of it was to do with things, but actually it became just a normal thing that they weren't really interested because I'm quite boring.
Yes.
And I just had a couple of flags that said, go and read the logs if these words came up or anything like that.
So this is like admin control, as it were, rather than you being able to see everything that they're looking at?
I could see everything that they were looking at.
You could just click on any link that they'd accessed.
Any link, any website that they'd access, I could click on and have a look if I wanted.
You're making a very compelling case for it. And what?
Just because I could do that at work with everybody I worked with.
Yeah.
Because that's what we do at work. You don't allow people to go anywhere. We did have some internet filters on,
sure,
to stop stuff. But it the most important thing is it prompted an adult conversation with them all the time. So if we got in the car for me to take one of them to Scouts,
yeah,
and I said, "So, you really quite like X person," and they'd go, "Yeah," I said, "Well, is what you're looking at appropriate?" When you're looking at it, and they go, and then we'd have a conversation about what was appropriate and what wasn't, and that way we had an adult conversation, and it's about having an adult conversation.
I hope so. I like this. I think you've made a really compelling case for the course of action that you personally chose to follow, but I don't know. I don't want you to be wrong, but you are putting an awful lot of faith in them, and B, I wasn't necessarily a model teenager, but neither do I look back anymore and sort of revel in how naughty I was and how much trouble I got into. But there's loads of stuff I wouldn't want you to know about that I was doing as a kid. And if I knew what you could access and what you couldn't access, then the place where I'd do the things I didn't want you to know about would be the place that I knew you couldn't access. Optimistic, perhaps, would be the word that I'd use to describe some of the things that you've said. But you know your sons and I don't, of course, so at risk of sounding rude... maybe they're as boring as you. No, I didn't mean it like that. I just meant if they don't have anything to hide from you, then that's probably the sign of a healthy and fulfilled childhood, rather than necessarily buying into the idea that if you're naughty and rebellious, then you're cool, and if you're not, then you're not. Something about it, though, isn't there? Even with Carl's really compelling description, there's something about it. Carl, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Would you read their diaries?
No, because that's...
Why not?
Because that's their reflections for themselves.
Well, no, it's also their... It's not just reflections. It's their descriptions of what they've done. It's like a log.
Well, it depends what you use a diary for, but yeah.
Well, that's what they're using it for. This is my fantasy, I've told you.
Okay, if they're using it for that, no, I wouldn't.
Why not?
Because they're allowed some privacy.
Right.
And I'm interested in what's being put into their mind, not what's coming out of their mind.
Nice answer. I like it. I like it. But I don't know. Some people probably would read diaries. Well, lots of parents have done over the years. 27 after 12 is the time. Sarah's in Nottingham. Sarah, what would you like to say?
Firstly, what was quite amusing is my son had actually put a tracker on my phone, which he admitted to doing recently, but I've had a tracker unbeknown to me on my phone for 4 years. So my son has been able to stay very private because he knows when I'm coming home and where I am and what I'm doing. And I had no idea. So that was very clever, really. And he's admitted to me that recently. But, of course, you know, I'd go out in the evening, you know, when he was 13, 14.
I mean, this is just Find My. This is just the things where you can see where people are. It's not quite what I mean by snooping. I mean, like, looking at what they're looking at.
Yes. No. I'm just saying that's one of the things he's admitted to me. But, yes, I have gone in. I went into his phone when he was in year six, so sort of they're 10, 11 years old. Right. And I went in once. I haven't really been able to sort of like get in, if you like, since, or massively tried to since. But when I did go into their phone, I was quite shocked by what I found, really. And it was, I mean, he was at a prep school in North London, and I'd known the children from year one, and they were all very nice, very well adjusted, affluent, lovely children, but a mixed school, and all these lovely little girls, and, you know, butter wouldn't melt. And it was, I was looking at group chats and various things, and there was imagery and things, and it was incredible to me, because I was actually saying to a researcher, I'm watching Stranger Things at the moment, and it's kind of like that underworld, that upside down world. It's like there's this whole upside down world for children that we have no idea and almost no memory of as well. That there's this whole life that's going on for them all, and their personalities, and what we're seeing isn't...
Without being shallow, just like shock people listening with what you're describing. Shocked you?
Because I was shocked how provocative and how sexualized it was, and I was shocked at these lovely little girls.
Why were you not shocked at the boys?
Because the girls were sort of driving stuff, really. I mean, you know, there was, for example, one of the messages that he was having was from a girl who was 2-3 years above him at the school and had left the school, who was, you know, he was sort of, I don't know, 10-11, and she was 12-13, and really messaging him, well, very provocative things. And I thought, you know, I was just quite shocked that this, and I knew the girl, and then her sister also was messaging him things.
Did you talk to him about it?
I didn't at the time, okay. Because it just, but I was, it made me understand him a bit more, and it made me understand that these kids weren't as green and naive, and it did shock me, though, honestly, because of the language they were using. There was swearing, there was, you know, I guess I just sort of, you know, it's that children are presenting a certain way, and these children can behave and seem to be, and they are these delightful, very easy children who just has another side of them that I didn't appreciate.
Always true, wasn't it? And you just, our parents wouldn't have had as easy access to it as you discovered. 12:30 is the time. Would you do it or wouldn't you do it? Is it a bit like all technology, when you're a sort of smug non-parent? Well, I'd never give my children. I remember this. You probably heard me say it on the radio. I'd never give our. We'll never use tablets. We'll never use tablets. We will read to them and sing them songs and play nutritious games. Also, you've got first and second child syndrome a bit. My poor oldest. I don't think she had a fizzy drink until she was much older than her sister was. Because you get your, we've got to be really militant about it. And then you sort of, oh, crikey, life's too short. And also, tablets on long car journeys are worth their weight in platinum. They really are. But you sit here before you reach that stage of life and go, no, never in a million years. I've got the opposite experience. Hindsight. Would you want to? I just don't know. 0345 6060 973 is the number you need. Dominic Ellis is here with your headlines.
The Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch has told LBC that she thinks Sir Keir Starmer's position is untenable after he resisted calls to resign. Sir Keir Starmer met with his cabinet this morning following one of the most difficult days of his premiership so far. A former Metropolitan Police Inspector has been charged with a series of sexual offences. The charges against John Doyle, who's 53, span a 12-year period until 2024 and relate to one alleged victim. And flood warnings are in force for almost 100 areas in England. There's no sign of a prolonged dry spell for at least a week. LBC weather, cloudy for most, with spells of rain falling heavy at times. Showers developing across the south throughout the afternoon, a high of 13 degrees.
This is LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
The people are friendly on the telephone. You can always get a problem solved.
You stepped up, I think, for an energy company, so well done.
The customer service is really good.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
Your customer service was tip-top. You know, I couldn't fault it.
Octopus Energy, great value and outstanding customer service, recommended by Which? 8 years running.
Enjoy an extra 20% off the village price in the Spring Savings event at Vista Village. From the 13th to the 22nd of February, save at Lululemon, UGG and more, plus discover experiences, dining offers and member rewards. On select lines and brands, T's and C's apply. See VistaVillage.com. Vista Village, what will you find?
Listeners, we interrupt the airwaves to share an incredible discovery. The reason why Britain hasn't been so great of late is because the country hasn't been eating enough Weetabix. We must get to work in rebuilding Great Britain, Bix by Bix. By delivering Weetabix to whoever plans the traffic diversions, to delivery drivers who can't seem to find your house, and people who don't stack the dishwasher properly. To Britain, we must say, have you had your Weetabix?
Thanks for a lovely evening. Would you like to come in for a coffee?
Yeah, okay. That'd be lovely.
Oh, gosh, sorry. I didn't mean... I just wanted you to see my new Wix kitchen. It's just been installed.
At Wix, our experts will support you every step of the way, from a free kitchen design service through to a professional installation. Plus, right now, find big savings in the Wix kitchen sale. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix. Terms apply.
At Pets in a Pickle, we know what it's like welcoming a new pet into the family. Whether it's a curious kitten or a wobbly-legged puppy, they're cute, they're chaos, and sometimes they get themselves into a pickle. That's why we offer fuss-free pet insurance policies with unlimited video call access with First Vet. So the only thing you have to worry about is keeping them away from your favourite vase. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 6060 973.
12:35 is the time. Oh, you thought it was meta already. I can't now comment on whether or not this is going well as a phone-in, because that could potentially involve critiquing people who've already called in. So I can't do the phone-in because it doesn't go well, or it might put you off from ringing in because you think I'm going to critique you. I shouldn't go meta like this, I've told you. You've got to be careful of meta. Snooping on children, historically not very fertile territory for radio phone-ins, and yet somehow simultaneously an absolutely fascinating issue. Cue me getting enormously intrigued and frustrated. I love the things that I think should work but don't work, but I can't comment now on whether or not this is working, because that would be unfair on the people who've already contributed, and it might possibly alienate people or discourage people who haven't contributed yet. What's the word to describe what I'm doing now? Meta's a bit. It's more than subtle. Is it postmodern? Am I being post? I'm not being postmodern, am I? What's the word to describe what I'm doing now, Keith? No, don't say that, mate. We're going to wash your mouth out. That's not fair. I'm doing my best. Bernard Manning. Well, I don't know what it is. It's like, you know, analysing the thing that you're doing while you're doing it. Like, the analysis becomes the actual... It is meta, isn't it? Meta is the word. It's meta, mate. Meta, mate. Metamatasis. Meta, what? Shut up. John's in Stevenage. John, what would you like to say?
This is really, really, really difficult. This is a case study in what happens when you don't, or what can happen when you don't. I have a mid-teenage child who I've always given my children as like freedom to be who they are and do what they want to do, and I have never snooped on them. We've always joked between us that they would have a hard time rebelling or being, you know, because we are so kind of open and relaxed about what they choose to do.
Yes.
Anyway,
and they can come to they can come to you with anything. Is how you've tried to raise them.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, talk to us about anything. And my eldest went out to a party or something like that. And on the way out the door, I was like, "Hey," and I handed her a pack of condoms. Sure. And was like, "Be careful."
Yeah.
To which she internally died inside.
She's
I'm sure.
Absolutely mortified, Dad. What the?
Yeah.
Fudge were you thinking, man? But anyway, we're by the
bar. That's part of the fun. I get the picture. But no, this child in particular was groomed by a...
This is a different child, a younger...
This is a different child. Oh, was groomed by an online predator. And I can't think anything but that I was negligent in giving them so much freedom that this could happen to them. The police were involved. The case is closed now, so I can talk about it.
Okay.
But one thing that stuck out to me so much is that we were told very frankly by the police officer that they would attempt to get the logs from the services that had been used. One was Snapchat and the other one was Messenger, as in Zuckerberg's one. And we were told flat out that Snapchat will respond and take these things seriously. Facebook will not. They just tell the police to get bent, and they don't provide any information. Whether this is actually true or not, or a gross misrepresentation, I don't know. I'm getting this information from the police officer in question.
Of course.
When they did check on the Snapchat activity, which took about 4 weeks in total, they came back that the person in question was overseas, and that was like a dead end. Especially if they're in America, there's absolutely no cooperation between the police here and the police there on these kind of issues. So it wasn't able to be taken any further, and the case was closed. But I had no idea this was happening until my child spoke to the someone at school and confided in them about it.
Listen, I can't tell you not to beat yourself up. I don't know all the details, and B, it's easier said than done. But I mean, all the snooping in the world, this is the point I was trying to make to the first caller, isn't going to enable us to protect our children from things that they don't want us to know about. I mean, is that, you know, short of inducing some sort of Big Brother type police state in your family, in your house, it's not going to happen. So
So here's the things that I have come up against as barriers. First off, the social media activity is less important in this particular case than the messenger services. This all happened over Facebook Messenger and Snapchat. And you can't easily snoop on those because they're encrypted end-to-end. Even if you install software on the device, it can't snoop on the actual messages. It can tell you who they're adding.
Right.
But that's meaningless. Yeah, it's completely meaningless, and unless you go to the level of installing screen recorders and keyloggers, which, first off, most mainstream products for this don't do that because that's malware, and it's like actively discouraged. You know, the companies don't want that to be possible. And the second, there is software that will do that. It costs a lot of money. And you are grossly, grossly invading their privacy when you do that. And in my case, I really feel like I needed to have done that. I should have known about this before it happened. But
no one can turn that voice off in your head. And actually, just while you've been speaking, Alex has been in touch to say, tell the guy speaking, I feel exactly the same as him. My daughter was groomed similarly, and I feel a complete failure as a father. And I wish you didn't feel that way, both of you, but I'm not going to waste time or energy just simply telling you that you shouldn't.
Thank you to Alex for that, and I wish him the best.
Just in the interest, that's kind of you as well. In the interest of people listening who might be able to watch out better, would you be comfortable telling me more about what actually happened?
My child was contacted initially on Facebook Messenger.
And how old were they at the time?
They were, let's say, mid-teens.
Okay, that's fine, yes.
It was someone that claimed to be was scouting them to be a model.
Oh.
That the child in question has self-esteem issues up the wazoo anyway. And so this is obviously very attractive. And they have done some modelling with my supervision through a camera club that I'm a member of, but so they probably thought that it was something they knew and they'd be relatively safe. The person that contacted them initially was a woman, who then put my child in contact with a male who purported to be a photographer. And they never met in person, which I'm incredibly glad about. But they entered into a relationship, or at least the semblance of one, from my child's perspective. I don't believe there were any images exchanged or anything like that. But he became quite emotionally manipulative and controlling. It was terrible all the way through. And this person was abroad. I believe they were American, so there is nothing that can be done to track them down.
It reached the point where your daughter's distress was such that she sought out help from somebody at school.
Yes, they confided in someone at school. I'm really glad that there is someone there that they felt comfortable take that to.
Nothing is foolproof, is it? Nothing's absolutely watertight, but you feel you should have known that this was going on, and no one's ever going to take that feeling away from you. But I don't know how feasible it is. Do you?
No.
The minute they say, this is just ours, let's keep this secret, is the minute that you lose that agency, I think.
Yeah, and even if you take their phone to snoop through it, they will very quickly become aware that you're doing that, and they will find a way around it. They can scrounge up other devices. One of my children, in an unrelated matter, was found to be using their friend's Facebook account because they weren't allowed to have one themselves. So even when you do things like, no, you can't have Facebook at this age, you're too young, they still find a way.
Yeah, I mean, that's the point I was trying to clumsily make earlier. The imaginative nature of children who don't want their parents to know what they're doing, even if it's relatively innocuous, they will, and maybe less so now. Certainly, talking to you and talking to Chris, you sound very techno literate. It's probably less so the case now that the kids are going to know more about the technology than the parents did, which that was certainly the case when I was growing up. I'm sorry for what you've been through. I will reiterate that any unbiased jurist listening to what you describe would not put any blame on you at all. But I appreciate that those are mere words and that they will do very little to absolve you in your own mind of responsibility for what happened. And equally inadequate probably is the observation that things could have been much worse, as I'm sure you've been over in your mind a million times. But you can, I mean, can you listen to that and not think I should do more? Can you listen to that and not think I want to know everything that's going on? And can you know everything that's going on? And if you were to hear now from a parent who's confident that they do know everything that's going on, you'd probably come away from that call not as disturbed as we are by John's, but disturbed in entirely different ways, probably. It's 12:46.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Keir Starmer holds a cabinet meeting as he hangs on to his job. Burnham speaks and the monarchy faces its biggest crisis yet over who knew what, when.
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
And when teams feel supported, they can achieve anything.
Sorry, just had even more of my team are off ill.
Have you tried Benenden Health? It's easy to set up. They've got a GP helpline you can book 24/7.
Where were we?
A coffee break, hopefully.
Press play on your people's health with a wide range of healthcare services for less than £16 per employee per month. Search Benenden for Business. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
I'm Leah, and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right, and my GP referred me to the CDC. Had some blood tests done, and within 24 hours I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
I'm going to tell you exactly what you need to do.
Dominate your finances.
Sunday morning. Listening to questionable financial advice from the FinTok Bros on his social feed.
Drowning in green. Scale, 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 scale.
This is the moment Isaac chose to search Barclays Life Skills, get some better money intel, and save up for that new skateboard. We're helping young people become money confident. Search Barclays Life Skills. Barclays. Make money work for you.
Stuck waiting again.
Tell me about it. I've spent all morning trying to get through to my GP.
Oh, I ditched that stress and joined Benenden Health. They've got 24/7 GP helpline. No waiting rooms, no sitting around.
Really? Sounds like a great service, unlike this one.
We're just about to get moving again.
Press play on your health with the 24/7 GP helpline and much more. All for less than £16 per person per month. Search Benenden Health. Fee reviewed periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
12:49 is the time. We should squeeze in a reading call. Apologies to everybody who rang in to conduct or contribute to the second phone-in that I set up because I wasn't sure the first one would be any good. But the first one has proven to be absolutely riveting, hasn't it, at times. On a much, much lighter note, I have got both an unhinged headline and a missing word round for you before we hand over to Sheila in a few minutes' time. I'm going to do the missing word round first. Now, if you pay attention to this programme, then there are all sorts of agencies and charities that will be able to provide you with the help and support that you need. No, only joking. If you pay attention to this programme, then you it's not quite going to work. But do you remember the very first one? The very first missing word round we ever did. And I think I accidentally said the answer out loud while setting up the question. And ever since then, whenever I'm doing a missing word round and I get to the bit where the word is missing, Keith will say that word in my ear. It's very close to that word, this. It's very close. That's just the only clue I'm giving you, all right? And you can't say it in my ear because it's the first word of the headline. Are you ready for this? This is today's missing word round. Blanks. Blanks. The new gold as Russians despair. blanks the new gold as Russians despair. What could it be? What could it possibly be? And you're... Oh, hang on. And we also have an...
Unhinged headline.
And this is. I mean, inevitably, it's in the Daily Telegraph. Where would we be? There'd be no unhinged headline without the Daily Telegraph, would there? And this is their op-ed page. Labour is damaging public trust in politics. Is the headline on this op-ed piece. So it doesn't have a byline. It's the actual newspaper's editorial. So the Daily Telegraph literally created a journalist called Boris Johnson and published his bilge and nonsense when they appointed him as their Brussels correspondent to such a degree that various lies about everything from the size of condoms through to the bendiness of bananas became part of the public, the tapestry of public ignorance. No man did more than Boris Johnson to completely misinform the public, the British public, of what went on in the European Union, what went on in Brussels and Strasbourg, than this man, who was on the payroll of the Daily Telegraph at the time. Subsequently, of course, the editor of the Sunday Telegraph was cheerleader-in-chief for Liz Truss's budget. I kid you not. They were all over Brexit, which they thought would be a wonderful, wonderful thing, and have yet to apologise for getting absolutely everything wrong. They obviously trumpeted the arrival of their own man in Downing Street, Boris Johnson, who proceeded to preside over all manner of criminality, malfeasance and corruption, morally. And Labour, because Piers... What's his chops? Because Keir Starmer appointed Peter Mandelson to a job in Washington, and everybody, including the Daily Telegraph, praised that decision. Labour is somehow damaging public trust in politics. I'm not, as you know, on board with the idea that all of Keir Starmer's problems are caused by the media. Most of Keir Starmer's problems are caused by Keir Starmer, and they are magnified hideously by a deeply corrupt media. But goodness me, if you needed a little illustration of how bent our ecosystem is, imagine being a serious jockey on the four donkeys of the crapopolyps. Imagine having spent your time, and this applies to broadcasters as well, imagine having actually been all in on austerity, on Brexit, on Boris Johnson and on Liz Truss, and to claim today, that Labour is damaging public trust in politics. I mean, It's almost impossible to conceive of the levels of ignorance and idiocy you would have to be trying to claim that Labour is damaging public trust in politics while you had that. Some of them were still pretending that all Boris Johnson had done was have a glass of wine and a slice of cake, weren't they? So conveniently glossing over that epic catalogue of calumny and moral corruption and criminality, right up to the point where he had to go because he lied about appointing a man against whom various allegations of sexual impropriety had been made before he actually promoted him, making jokes about the fact that his name resembled some of the offences that people had accused him of. And still these people pretend that Johnson had to go because of a glass of Prosecco. And it is only from that mindset of boundless dishonesty, ignorance and hypocrisy that you can claim, as the Daily Telegraph does today, that Labour is damaging public trust in politics.
Unhinged headline.
Ah, you missed some fun yesterday, Keith. We launched Unhinged Head. But it didn't go very well. You can listen back on live. You can listen back on the Global Player. I want to take one call on reading. Possibly two, but Fran's first, either way. Fran, how do you get a child who doesn't think they're a reader to read?
Hello, James. Hello. It's lovely to speak to you. I've been listening for a very, very long time and never thought I would call in. But when I heard you were talking about this topic, I just had to. How do you get a child reading? I mean, I'm coming to this conversation as a parent, as someone who struggled to read myself as a child. I'm also a children's author, and I also part own a children's independent bookshop.
Yeah, I'm so, looking for someone a bit more qualified, Fran.
I mean, I don't know if you know much about the campaign this year, but it's one of the biggest campaigns in a generation to get children reading, which is the National Year of Reading.
Yes.
Which has got some brilliant stuff going on. But I suppose my biggest sort of advice One of them is just to give children the agency to read what they want to read and to expand our definition of what reading is.
Yeah.
I think, you know, one of the problems is for years that there's been an emphasis on reading being for education, which is obviously great. And reading does tons of things. It expands your vocabulary. It does lots for your education. But if we want children reading for pleasure, which is the thing that we know has amazing benefits. It's good for your mental health. It's good for your, you know, empathy. There's tons of things that it's good for. Then we have to allow children to read in whichever way they want to.
Here's a child who doesn't.
Yeah.
And who doesn't think it is for them.
Sure.
What are you going to do?
Well, I think, you know, I mean, we see this sometimes in the bookshop. There's a pushback sometimes for reading things like graphic novels, for example, because they're not seen to be sort of educational enough.
Oh,
and actually, it happens. But if a 9-year old, if an all a 9-year old wants to read is graphic novels, then let them, you know?
Yeah.
That is doing so much for them. It's doing so much for their mental health, their concentration. There's, you know, a lot of benefits. And another thing is also sort of allowing audiobooks to be.
That count? You count that as reading?
I would, yeah. I mean, listening to stories, you're still getting the benefits of, you know, I mean, there are wonderful things of reading, say, fiction and walking in someone else's shoes and learning about other people's lives. And you get that from, you know, listening to audiobooks as much as you would from reading real books. And I think my other bit of advice would be to read to your children. And that sounds simple, but I feel like that drops off sometimes the minute children can read for themselves.
It's still a pleasure. I like being read to now.
I mean, I still read to my 9-year-old every night religiously for at least half an hour. And I think, you know, for her, that just allows her to enjoy the stories without working too hard. And she reads herself as well. But
it's a joyous thing to do.
Yeah,
you never kind of really grow out of it completely.
No.
It just becomes a bit uncool and you have to pretend that you don't want mummy or daddy to read to you anymore because that's how it goes. Oh, I love that. It's such a sad statistic, isn't it? The one about...
It's awful.
The number that actually enjoy it. And this isn't, and you wouldn't do this anyway, I can already tell, but this isn't a sort of let's all attack people phone in. But parents do have to take on board a little bit of responsibility for this.
Yeah, I think there's two things here. I think that, number one, you know, the shocking statistic of how few primary schools have libraries. You know, teachers are already overworked. They've got the burden of kind of exposing children to books if they're not being exposed to that at home. And actually, so few of them have libraries these days.
Yeah, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, I also think that it should be mandatory to read to your class at the end of the day, but I appreciate that, you know, teachers already overworked and, you know, there's a lot they've got on their plates.
Where's the bookshop?
It is in Herne Hill in London.
Ah.
Yeah.
What's it called?
It's called the Paper Cat Children's Bookshop.
I know.
Do you
probably know my brother-in-law?
Does he own the wine shop?
That's the fella.
Yes.
What more do you need in life than books and wine?
Exactly.
Isn't that incredible? And if you want to, tell us your name if you want so that people can buy your books. I know your name because I'm a brilliant journalist and I've worked it out by doing some research.
You're very kind.
You have three names, in fact.
I do. I know. It's a bit ridiculous. My name's Fran Preston Gannon and I make sort of picture books and I've done lots of illustrations for things like poetry and, sort of chapter books and things like that.
And
you
went to stay with Maurice Sendak at his...
I did.
At his actual house?
I spent a month living with... I know. I don't know how that happened to me. I'm still not really sure how that happened, and it was 12 years ago now. He was the most incredible man.
That's one of the maddest things I've ever heard.
Honestly,
you lucky, lucky thing.
I know. I still pinch myself. I'm not really sure it was true.
Well, it definitely is. Yeah. It's on your website.
Yeah.
Fran Preston Gannon, author, bookseller, all round good egg. And evangelist as well. Because it's got to be on you, lads and laddesses. You've got to get them reading. You've got to get them reading. There's no downside. Trust me. Seriously. Oh, a lovely call. Maurice Sendak. If you missed any of today's show, it's Where the Wild Things Are. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back for free. Global Player, LBC app, up to date, latest news. I'm just going to miss out some words because I'm late. Listen, podcast, O'Brien, bits, let's show, day, app, store now. Tom Sawbrick for Fogarty.
Oh, come on. Full name, at least.
Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you very much, James. James O'Brien, thank you. At 2 today, I will set out why I think the two strands of the Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor story, as it is today, sexual exploitation and allegations he shared UK government documents with Jeffrey Epstein, are the most serious crisis the Windsors have faced since World War One, since George V took it in hand to help it to survive. Can it survive this? I wonder. Straight after the news, though, the Cabinet has met this morning. Keir Starmer has thanked them for their support and unity. But just now, Andy Burnham has given a public speech, without doubt keeping himself in the leadership loop. Following recent events, he said, "I think the time has come to call an end to this era in British politics where politicians got too close to wealth." Who's he on about?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, Sir Keir Starmer has thanked his strong and united cabinet following their support over the Lord Mandelson scandal. He also told his top team earlier that the whole Labour Party wants Anna Sawar to become First Minister, despite his calls for Sir Keir to quit. Addressing the Resolution Foundation in Westminster, Andy Burnham called for more unity within the Labour Party. He says he believes the government has already made a big difference, but it could go further to tackle the cost of living crisis.
Having frozen rail fares, we now need to start talking about lowering rail fares. That's the benefit that public control can bring, and I believe it's what we should be working towards together with the government. To do that requires stability, and I make my own call for that today across the Labour Party.
Prince William has ignored a question about Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor's ties to Jeffrey Epstein during his visit to Saudi Arabia. He was asked twice by a reporter while meeting women footballers in Riyadh. Last night, Buckingham Palace said it would stand ready to support police with any investigation into the King's brother. Andrew has always denied wrongdoing. Four people have been remanded in custody after appearing in court charged with the murder of a teenager in South Wales. 17-year-old Tristan Shea Kerr was found dead at a property in Caerphilly 5 days ago. The defendants have not yet entered pleas. Birmingham's bin strike is set to continue until at least September in their long-running dispute over pay. Workers have voted to carry on their industrial action in the latest ballot. Oné Kassab is from Unite the Union.
We've knocked on over 20,000 doors across Birmingham, and it's absolutely clear that the sympathy with the vast majority of people is with the strikers. They can see that working-class people cannot afford to lose those types of sums. What they're seeing all over social media is the council claiming that there's absolutely no problem, that the rubbish is being cleared, when we all know that's an absolute and utter nonsense.
Birmingham City Council maintains Unite has rejected fair and reasonable pay offers. And the Environment Agency has issued flood warnings for almost 100 areas in England. The alerts cover the south, the Welsh border and the East Midlands. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 45 points at 10,341. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.15. LBC weather, a cloudy and dull day for most, with spells of rain falling heavy at times, drier for a time in the south before spells of rain spread eastwards, a high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
Club card accepted.
Feel the power to lower prices with Tesco Club Card. Get a Cadbury milk tray, now £5, down from £10. Helping you share the love this Valentine's Day. Tesco, every little helps. Majority of larger stores, milk tray 445 grams, ends 14th February. Club Card or app required.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there. Good afternoon to you. Now, the Cabinet met this morning. I'll speak to somebody in just a moment who was there. And in the last half an hour or so, Andy Burnham, the Mayor of Greater Manchester, has given a public speech in which he's addressed some of the events of this week and given his view on what the party should do next, what the leadership perhaps should do next as well. But I think it's pretty clear that he still wants to be in the mix should the possibility of a leadership bid unfold for him. He's blocked at the moment because of that recent NEC vote to disallow him, essentially, from standing as an MP, as a candidate in the Gorton by-election that takes place soon. Alongside his comments about the government, he alludes to politics generally, Westminster generally, and talks about Britain's politics having got too close to people of great wealth. He referenced the markets as well. We'll talk to Henry Reilly in about half an hour about that. He was there at the speech listening to it. And we can actually play you something of it now, just a little taster.
Bring pace and focus to lowering the cost of other of life's essentials. To do that requires stability, and I make my own call for that today across the Labour Party. Of course, stability comes from greater unity, and that would be helped by a more inclusive way of running the party. But recent events makes that now feel possible.
Well, we'll see whether that is what happens beyond this leadership crisis, whether that is something that the party does make a shift on. We'll hear more from Henry in about half an hour about that speech. Baroness Jenny Chapman, though, joins me first of all, a Labour peer who's the International Development Minister within the Foreign, Commonwealth and Development Office, the Foreign Office, as it's typically known. Good afternoon to you. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks, Sheila. Nice to be here.
How would you describe the mood in that cabinet meeting?
It was... considering the last few days that we've had, I thought it was a very honest and a warm meeting. There was some reflection and there was lots of people giving their honest assessment of why they think what's happened has happened, what they think we need to do about it. But there was a real resolve that we need to really focus on delivering for the country and not be distracted and not allow the kind of temptation to get into drama distract us from what we were put there to do. So I felt yesterday morning was a difficult morning for sure, but it feels today that we have reminded ourselves of what it is we're here to do.
When people were giving their honest assessment, as you describe it, was that something you were witnessing for the first time, an honest assessment? Had there previously been perhaps a degree of reluctance, even fear, to give a fully honest assessment, as we saw in Wes Streeting's text to Peter Mandelson? There was more assessment going on privately than there was publicly with the Prime Minister. Well, publicly, I mean around the cabinet table. Was this the first time you heard some people speaking that honestly?
I think the level of openness that there was today was new. I don't think anyone's ever felt fear. But I think sometimes because cabinet meetings are heavy agenda, it's a serious meeting, the temptation to turn up, be professional, get the business done, and get back to, you know, back in your department doing your job as a minister is very strong. But actually, I think what we've recognised now as a government is we need to make space for those wider discussions and to allow disagreements to be surfaced in that sort of context rather than doing things always inside conversations.
Is there an understanding from the Prime Minister in particular, because it's very important that he understands it more than anybody else around that table,
yes,
that dissent or questions are just an important part of establishing what's the right way to go rather than an attack? Was it too centrally controlled under Morgan McSweeney, sorry, Piers Morgan.
That would be quite a thought experiment.
Yeah, let's get him in the job. Morgan McSweeney and Keir Starmer, then it will be going forward.
I mean, I can